Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Monday, September 10th, 2018. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program and a happy new year to all my fellow Jewish brothers and sisters out there. Yes, typically, historically, I do not do a show on Rosh Hashanah, but it is a very big day, my friends. It is the Monday after UFC 228, and I have spoken to God and I have told him that anytime we have a show on the Monday after UFC 228, we must do it. And so here we are. But a Shana Tova to all of you. I hope you're joining us. I hope you're tuning in, whether it's live on live.twitter.com/ESPN, or if it's on iTunes, Stitcher, ESPN.com, Spotify, wherever else you have been enjoying the show, maybe even YouTube as well. It's a great day to be here. So we have so much to discuss on today's program. Of course, coming off UFC 228, of course, there's a lot that happened in Dallas, Texas over the weekend. Tyron Woodley is still the UFC welterweight champion of the world. He submitted Darren Till in the second round via Darce choke, his first submission since 2009, his first submission as a UFC fighter. And for once, it feels like he is starting to get the respect and love and admiration that he deserves. Now, the co-main event, it never happened. Nico Montano, she pulled out on Friday morning. She was sent to the hospital. Faulty weight cut, if you will. Valentina Shevchenko has her own theories. She has now been stripped, Nico has, of the flyweight title. Vindication? I'll let you be the judge. Has the UFC lost patience? I'll let you be the judge. And so we'll talk about all things flyweight division. And the entire flyweight division is mad at me for some reason, just because I'm speaking the truth. What's up with that? What a great card it was, though. Top to bottom, amazing performances from the likes of Jessica Andrade, Aljamain Sterling, Jeff Neal, Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, Jim Miller, Diego Sanchez, Irene Aldana, I mean, Darren Stewart. I thought it was the best card of the year. There weren't that many duds, maybe one, maybe two. But overall, if you paid for that pay-per-view, if you bought a ticket on Saturday and went to the American Airlines Center, and thank you very much to Dallas for all the love they showed us, I think you got your money's worth. So today on the program, my friends, we will be talking about all things 228. We're now on the road to Moscow, UFC's first event in Russia, so that's a lot of fun. And of course, on the post-show with New York Rick, we'll answer some of your questions. We'll look back at the betting odds and ends from 228. We'll look a little bit ahead to Moscow as well. There is so much going on, as always, in the world of MMA. So let me run down today's lineup. Then we'll get to our first guest of the day. And of course, we had to start out with one guest and one guest only. There was only one way I wanted to start this show. The welterweight champion of the world, Tyron Woodley. He'll be joining us in a matter of moments, but let me run down the lineup. So at around 3:30, we will be joined by Pearl Gonzalez. If you are strictly a UFC fan, you may remember Pearl Gonzalez last year. She had two fights in the UFC. She went 0-2. However, she has since gone to Invicta. She has since dropped down to, actually gone up to 125, and she's undefeated. She's 3-0 in Invicta. She's, I think, more comfortable, more well-rounded. She has matured a lot as a fighter. She just had a win 2 weekends ago. It was an emotional one after the passing of her father. In any event, she'll be joining us in studio at 3:30. I'm really looking forward to that. At 3:10, we'll be joined by Diego Sanchez. Talk about his big win. At 2:45, we'll be joined by CM Punk in his first live interview since his fight a couple of months ago. We'll be joined by Aljamain Sterling at 2:25. At 2:05, Valentina Shevchenko will talk to us about what's next for her. Colby Covington at 1:45. 1:25, Jim Miller. But first, let us not waste any time and say hello to the man who was victorious in the main event on Saturday night at the American Airlines Center, the best welterweight in the world, the man who shut up all the critics with his second round submission of Darren Till. The one and only Tyron Woodley is on the phone. Tyron, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for doing this, Tyron. You know we appreciate it so very much. I was thinking about this morning, and I wanted to get your take on it. I love seeing all the love and admiration and respect that you're getting on this Monday and on this Sunday, yesterday, after the win. And I was looking back at your record, and it feels like for the first time since maybe the Dong Young Kim knockout. Not even the Robbie Lawler fight, because afterwards everyone was talking about who you called out. It feels like this is the first time that you are just getting 100% love after a win. Does it feel like that to you as well?
You know, as I said before, you know, I used to wonder why. Like, you know, I'm doing everything right. You know, everybody who's, you know, doing things wrong, taking PEDs, you know, doing hit and run, like anything you can think of that would seem to be negative, those are the people that are making the most money and getting the most love. So I didn't understand it. And I quit trying to understand it because at the end of the day, you can't force somebody to like you, can't force somebody to think you a certain way. So I just don't want to get used to it, you know what I mean? Because, you know our fans, in one moment those things can change. So I'm just focused on, you know, becoming the greatest welterweight of all time. And my coaches are proud. That makes me happy because, you know, these guys put a lot of time, a lot of work, a lot of effort into training me and preparing me because each opponent is more difficult. This opponent was more difficult than the last, and, the stakes just keep rising.
I was talking to Chael right before the fight, and we were talking about how we feel the fight is going. And the one thing I thought about you going into this fight, I was worried because when you said that this fight is personal, I was worried that you were fighting too many people. I was worried that you were fighting Darren Till and the UFC and Dana White and the fans and the haters and that you were putting too much on your plate. Although after the fact, I'm wondering if you actually perform better when it's personal, when there's too much on your plate, as opposed to maybe the Maya fight where it was just kind of a fight. Is it possible that it's actually better for you when you're fighting too many people like you were on Saturday?
You know, from the analysts, I always say that you never know how a fighter fights on emotion until he competes. You know, John Jones, we've seen he thrives tremendously with emotion. We've seen Jose Aldo, he might have gotten a little too emotional. So you never know until you get in a position, but this time I couldn't help it. I couldn't fake it. I couldn't, you know, avoid it. I had to take it nail on. And I just pray that my family, they pray for me that I just, you know, stay focused, keep my strength, and not really just focus too much on the things I couldn't control, but really more so focus on the things I can and the people that are supporting me and that I'm God's chosen one and that it's my job to go out here and I am the best. And, you know, one thing, you know, randomly, LL Cool J walks into the lobby, the hotel in L.A., he said, talk to yourself. He said, be quiet, let your actions speak for you. He said, tell yourself you can do it. Tell yourself you're the greatest. And it was the first time I was nervous for a fight since 2005, my first fight. Never been nervous for a fight, like actually the fight. It was just so much riding. You know, I got a single coming out this week. You know what I mean? The platform that I have, all the things in the society that, you know, I think I can generate some positive exposure to using my platform. I need to be, fortunately, I need to be the champion to be able to reach the masses. So I walked in there with a lot, but I prayed. I think I handled myself well, got it done. And once again, I'm proving that I'm the best welterweight of all time.
How did you react to being nervous for the first time in so long? Did that freak you out a little bit?
Yeah, it freaked me out. It freaked me out a lot, actually. I mean, I'm not too big of a man to say that. It freaked me out, and I just got the prayer wars. I got my mom and I got my sister and I got my videographer, I got my friend. Everybody, I just was honest. Hey, I'm nervous, and I don't know what this feels like. I ain't never been nervous before. I know I train. I know I'm ready. I know I'm better. And they just all touched and agreed and prayed, and we you know, I walked out there and I just felt so light. I felt so free. It just felt like nothing can happen to me tonight. That's really what I felt like. And I'm pretty sure that's what it looked like when people watched me fight.
Did the nerves have anything to do with Darren Till and his skill set? Tyron?
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I lost you for a quick second. Did the nerves have anything to do with Darren Till?
Not really. I mean, I really get up for that type of, thank you guys. I really get up for that type of smoke. You know, when somebody's, you know, the greatest grappler, the best play fighter, he did this to everybody else. You know, look at my resume, you know, just leg kicking, beating everybody machine. You know, Joey Meehan had just rattled off some crazy victories with Romakis and anybody else you can think of. None of these guys look like, I say it all the time, and I think people think I'm just saying it. Bobby Lawler didn't look like this vicious boogeyman like he looked against everybody else. It's a preparation, it's a mindset, it's a coaching, and it's just, I just don't want to lose. Like, you have to kill me in there, you know? And when you think about putting all those things in perspective, it wasn't the fact what he brought. his tenacity, his KO power, his balance, his range, his gauge of distance. Yeah, it made me train hard. He provided the components of a fighter that made me really have to cover every stone, because had I not overly prepared, you know, it could have been a bad night for me.
You mentioned something on Saturday after the fight about seeing him early in the week and kind of feeling bad and knowing that he's about to suffer his first loss, because you've been there before. There was a time where you thought you were going to be undefeated for a long time, and then you met Nate Marquardt. Was it just something you're like, oh, I know I'm beating this guy, or was there something in his demeanor that you were feeling that this man doesn't really believe that he's going to win?
I mean, people don't believe in the jitters. They don't believe in the pressure. I mean, you saw me the week before in the gun. I knew I was fighting for the title next. I was focusing too much on sponsorships. I made a fortune in sponsorships, but I got my butt kicked. You know what I mean? Dana told me that I was going to fight for the world title next if I beat him. The only reason I would have went to Vancouver was going down in his hometown in the week of the fight. He said, no, Matt Brown and Robert fighting, so winning that fight's my first title. I told myself I was still focused. I told myself it didn't bother me, but I lied. And he was overwhelmed. He was feeding into the media too much. He was too hyped up with the winning face-off, shadow boxing, getting all pumped up. And I don't back down. I mean, I don't know if he looked at it in my eyes. I've been fighting my whole life, like near-death experiences. This shit don't scare me. So I think he recognized that, but when he got in the octagon, I said, it's going to be too much for him. It's going to be too much pressure. And I looked at his face, and he was empty. And I said, I'm about to put it on him. You know, Coach, my mom told me, you think wrong, brother. She said, Coach said, go out there, be the bully. You go first. He said, kick his ass the whole time. Do not ease up. You keep your foot in his ass the whole fight, and he can't take it. He's going to break. He's going to crumble. Keep putting the pressure on him, and, you know, that's what I did.
Was this weight cut a little tougher than the ones in the past? I couldn't help but notice that, you know, it seemed like your mouth was a little dry when we spoke on Thursday. I know typically you don't love doing those things, you know, the day before the weigh-ins, but was this one any different?
Well, you should have told me to put on some damn chapstick, Ariel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's what you should have told me, hey, man, your lips look like Pookie from New Jack City. You know, it wasn't a tougher weight cut than a lot than the other times. I did everything right. You know, I get so close to my lean muscle mass that my body really is so close to 0% body fat. It might be 0% body fat when I finally get to 70.
Wow.
So the only meal I missed was the dinner before weigh-in. So Thursday night, I didn't eat dinner. So I ate all the way up until then, which is really good for any fighter. And, you know, sometimes you got to make a choice. Do you drink and get up to 178, or do you stay at 176 but not have any energy? And every time I had to make that choice, I made the choice to drink Gatorade or Body Armor or a protein shake, or I made a choice to eat. So I was fine weight-wise. I really was pissed. I really went off on the UFC for the bullshit that happened with the weigh-in. I went at 8:30 to check my weight. I get there, I'm like, oh, shit, I'm on my way. Cool, I'm going to go up there and grab my Reebok gear so I don't get fined. I get there, and they're like, oh, no, we gave you new gear. Here, we should give you stuff. You go right over. I didn't know. I mean, I guess it's been a year. I didn't remember. I didn't know people got there at 8 a.m. to secure their position in line for 9. I thought we just all came at 9, and they did it by the order of the car. So at 8:30, they saw I was at weight. They gave me some new Reebok gear. Cool, I walk over. I waited to weigh in. I walk up on the stage, and you see me having a conversation with Letty, and I was like, she's like, okay, we're gonna shop with the underwear first, and then if we need the towel, we're gonna use the towel. I'm like, why would you do that? I just weighed in scratch a minute ago with no underwear on. So why would I even if my underwear weighed 0.1, I'm gonna be 0.1 over. So she said, no, we just wanna do it this way first. So, you know me, I'm like, why would you make your champion get on the scale and the scale say 171 and have everybody, oh, we were worried about Darren. Tyron's the one. I mean, don't do that shit to me. I'm too professional for that. And that made me mad, because I told her, I said, why are we doing that? I said, let's just bring the towel out right now. It's stupid. It'll make no sense. Because it makes it seem like I needed an additional attempt to make weight, and I didn't.
I didn't even have to work out that morning. Thank God. I thought I had to work out. I woke up at 4 a.m. to check my weight, and I just couldn't sleep. You know, it's fight week, so I was like restless. I woke up at like 4 a.m. I was 171. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna set my alarm from 7:40. Do a quick job, jump in the sauna, whatever I got to do, knock off this pound. And I woke up and I used the restroom, which I hardly ever do. So I used the restroom and shit, I was at weight. So I was happy. That kind of killed my vibe.
Wow. And now let me ask you about Saturday night and the entrance in particular, because I loved it. I got goosebumps and I noticed that you switched it up. Initially, you came out to the song by John Legend and Common called Glory from the movie Selma. And the timing, I don't know if you guys practiced that or rehearsed it, but the timing of when they talked about putting their hands up and in Ferguson, which is where you're from, and you doing it, just they nailed it. Why did you switch that up? Why did you do that?
You know, I was originally going to walk out to my song, I Beat Your Ass, so I Have a Wiz Khalifa. Wiz's birthday was the day he was going to come to the fight. He's going to make a big deal. He's going to walk me out. He's going to perform the song. And I just really started doing the math in my mind. I've never seen a person walk up to their own song or a person that get all that stuff, win the fight. They always lost. So I'm like, I don't think that's what I want to do right now. So I talked to Wiz. He was going to stay at home. He had a son anyway. And so I said, all right, you know, to celebrate my homie's birthday, I'm going to come out to We Them Boys. That's a classic song. And I'm walking in with my corner guy, and then it'll kick into I Ain't Turning Back, which is my traditional walkout song. Then the day before, I just started looking at all the Kaepernick stuff and, you know, all the weapons that are always formed against me and how much harder I always got to push to just get the even level of respect. And then, you know, it's my chance to make a statement. And then I heard that song. And then we just talking about, you know, everything. The Ferguson stand-up, I was walking out with my hand up. I didn't even hear the song because, you know, I always got headphones on. I'm listening to a different song than the walkout. I can't hear anything. Oh. I never have been able to. So that was just probably God. That was just probably a spiritual thing that those things aligned. Heidi and Candido, they decided when they were going to cut it. They wanted to just play a piece. I said, no, play the whole first verse. Right when he said it, right when Common finished his verse, then jump in, because I think the way that the music revs up right after that would be perfect. So I want to go back. That's something I actually want to see if I can get Zach and those guys to actually send me, because that's something that I want to keep. That's a special moment for me. And I think I sent out a strong message. I was silent with my mouth, but my gloves were very, very loud.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
And my elbows.
Yes. Did he hurt you at any point in the fight?
Yeah, he hurt my elbow with his head.
Okay.
No, and I thought I broke my hand because I punched him really hard in the first round. I'm like, damn, that hurt. You know, but you know me, I broke my foot on the first kick at Kelvin Gastelum. I tore my labrum against, Damian Maya, but a champion keeps riding. So I cracked him in the head the first round. I got the corner, and you could hear Dean say, man, did you hurt your hand? I was like, and I looked at him, I smiled, I was just jammed. So I went out there anyway, and that's, you know, part of the reason I was dropping so many elbows with my right hand instead of punches, but also the elbows were doing more damage. I took my glove off there at the end of the fight, and my bone was broken out. So then I took my thumb and I pushed it in. It made it sound like some light bulbs cracking in my hand.
Oh.
It popped back in. Then it came out, and I pushed it back in. Boom. And I said, all right, let me quit messing with it because I'm not a doctor. I don't want to ice it because I don't want nobody to see it. Then Chill called me out, bruh. I'm like, I went the whole night, and you going to be the one that said, hey, why didn't you shake my hand? Said, you're right. I'm like, come on, dog. So I just, man, as we were on the phone beginning this interview, I'm leaving the doctor right now. I didn't break my hand. I dislocated the shit out of it. And that's why I pushed it back into place. So I dislocated some ligaments in my head. I get an MRI tomorrow morning to see if they need to perform a surgery on it. They put a brace on it, so I got like a customized brace that they just made for me. I got that on there now. I'm really glad it's not broken, but you know sometimes ligaments is worse. You'd rather you had a bone broken than the ligaments. So with the new technology, I'm really considering just flying back down to Pensacola, Florida, where I have my shoulder surgery done, and having them throw some stem cell in there, do a 3 or 4 series of stem cell, and then just rehab it and call it a day.
Does that put the idea of you fighting at MSG in jeopardy?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the game needs me right now. I'm in great shape. I mean, I can beat that clown on one hand, so I'm not too worried about it.
Is that what you want? Do you want to fight on that card next?
You know what? To be honest, area, like, I'm just so on eggshells about saying anything I want, fight-wise or card-wise or opponent-wise. I just want to keep winning. I mean, I think people are finally starting to recognize I'm the greatest welterweight of all time. And that's really all I want. I really just wanted to go out there and get God glory, go out there and just push my body to the limit and have people see me do freaking crazy performances or crazy game plan, whatever the case may be, and be like, man, how the heck did he do that? And I can just say, hey, man, God, you know, it's so much I had going into this fight that people don't know about mentally, personally, you know, that I can't even share a lot of it. But the fact that I was able to go out there and do that, in spite of everything, man, I can't stop giving God glory today, because there's no way I should have been winning that fight with everything that's on my plate, you know what I mean?
But it's got to be Colby, right? That's such a big fight, and that's the fight where you'll be beloved. Everyone will. I mean, look at Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg thought you were beating up Colby. You see that video of him going
up? I know. Hey, shout out to Uncle Snoop. He hit me up yesterday. Boy, he is a fool for that video. I was done laughing. In the area, I'm not, you know, saying I won't fight Colby. I was the one that said, all right, you want to fight? Let's get it on. He's the one who bitched out. He's like, it's kind of embarrassing. He talked all that crap. Like, he like almost idolized me, and I was obsessed. Like, I was 90% of all his social media, and he won an interim belt, and he crawled on the rock. Like, really? That was kind of weird. But, yeah, you know, I thought I was going to, I mean, Darren Till took his whooping. That was Colby's whooping. I mean, that was Colby's whooping that he was supposed to get. So it's never that I didn't say I was going to fight this guy. I went on social media. I publicly was like, I was in the city. I'm like, drop a pen. If you really want, we can just fight in the street. He just was quiet. So now he wants to, I'm pretty sure he's going to come on the show and have a whole bunch to say. You know, let him know that I said he a bitch. And also let him know that I said him and John Harnett are terrible at scripting their stuff, and they maybe should talk to somebody more professional.
Are you prepared for what this fight could bring? I mean, just look at what Snoop was saying. And look at him at the White House, and look at you, and look at him, and I mean, like, this could get into some interesting territory, and it could be territory that the UFC.
We're in interesting territory with Kaepernick and
yeah.
Ferguson, call it police brutality. And if this is a fight that can draw more attention, and people start actually, I want to see some people start handling the issue, like not to just jump into the Nike campaign, but you ever so far. Been out of shape about Nike campaigning and rallying behind Kaepernick. How about we talk about the issues that we're talking about, the reason behind kneeling at the national anthem? You know, Kobe. Kobe probably didn't even vote for Trump. He probably knows, you know, my stance. He studies me like a freaking groupie, and now he's at a point that he's trying to get under my skin, because that's the only way. He was going to get a fight to get him near me. He was on Fight Pass, fighting in Asia, not just regular Fight Pass. Only Fight Passes in Asia was a time zone where nobody was watching until he kept talking about me. And then they got him to fight against, you know, Damian Maia, which I wrote the book on how to beat. He should thank me. And then he got the RDA fight. Outside of that, you know, he would have taken forever to get to where he's at. So this is going to be a huge push if this fight happens. I don't know if it is. You know, I don't know if it's Usman. I don't know if it's him. You know, I can mess around fighting George. I can fight the winner of Robert Whittaker or Gaffam. Who knows? Like, I'm down for whatever direction it goes, but they about to pay me, though. I can tell you that much. They about to pay me.
Speaking of which, the number one question I got from fans when I told them that you'd be on, number one, no doubt about it, and I know you said on Saturday no smoke, but the number one question, why didn't Dana do interviews? Why didn't he go to the press conference? Why did he look upset when he put the belt on you? What's going on there? Do you feel like after what he said on Friday about you, and I know you heard some of that stuff, he shoots himself in the foot. He'll never be liked. On Saturday, he should be giving you your props.
You know, I didn't hear anything he said. And I usually get my phone taken away Friday, Saturday. This time I gave it up on Thursday. I just recognize that whether it's Dana, whether it's fans, you have to know me. And you have to know what I fight for. You got to know what it took for me to get there, and you got to know where I come from. If you know all those things, there's no way you can dislike me. At very least, you have to respect me. And if you are any slightest bit of any type of person that can read or access the internet, you can look for yourself. You can check my resume out. And I don't know if he has an issue with me. He hasn't communicated that he does. I haven't spoken to him a ton, but I haven't spoken to anybody a ton. So it's not that I'm avoiding talking to Dana White. And then also, you know, I don't know why he left. I don't know why he didn't do the press conference. From my knowledge, after he put the belt around me, he walked directly out the arena. That's something that you guys might have to get him for questions on. I can't really answer that for him. All I can say is that I'm too focused on this week. Is a big week for me, man. I got a crazy single, I Beat Your Ass, coming out. He should tee up old Wiz Khalifa. The second I won that fight, the first thing I was thinking about, give God glory, because he deserve it. You know what I mean? Say happy birthday to your son. Turned 10 today. And now it's time to really blow the single. I've been sitting on this for a long time. It's perfect time. And the soundtrack, the movie, the video could just be the fight with the music behind it. You know what I mean? I mean, who can contest I'll Beat Your Ass right now? Can't no rapper, can't nobody on earth contest those facts. So I'm just glad I was able to get it done, not focus too much on all the negative stuff, come out unscathed. I don't even remember the one punch he landed. Nobody said those stats, though. Oh, my God, he broke the record for the least amount of significant strikes. It was 74 strikes to what, one, one, two, something like that?
Yeah, I think one.
Never heard that. Never heard that stat. You know, so, but it is what it is.
Two last quick things. Two last quick things. What did you say to him backstage?
What I said to, I kind of said it to a couple people before then. I said, man, you know, so the first time I said him, I said, shake, rattle, and roll, man, because he was saying, you know, hopefully you're still around. You know, I would love another chance to compete against you again. And, you know, I said, you know, any day. And I said, when I was 10-0, I was undefeated. I never thought I was going to lose. It broke my heart. It ripped the freaking heart out of my body. And I said, but you either lose or you learn. I said, you learn. You learn from now. And I can't tell him exactly what to learn, because he knows what he needs to learn from me. He knows what he could have did differently. He knows probably, one, I'm probably in the wrong division. Two, I got a little too pumped up. I said he was too pumped up at the weigh-ins. He was too pumped up. Too much energy. Too hyped up. That adrenaline going to grab him. He ain't never felt it before, but it is not just on your debut. Anytime you allow outside octagon things to get you so wrapped up into those and wrapped up into that, it'll dump you in the octagon. That's why I never listen to the walkout song. That's why I got my own music on. That's why I try to stay home more relaxed and stay away from everything. That's why I do a walkthrough. I walked through the arena earlier that day, and I imagined it loud, people booing, throwing lettuce, tomatoes, cursing me out, cheering for me, loving me, hating me. And I go in there, and I go through the whole game, and I imagine every worst-case scenario. I find any slippery spot, any dent in the octagon. Oh, I say, look, tonight, it's a small octagon. You can't be messing around. Keep your ass off the back of the octagon, Tyron. Push forward, push forward. We go through everything. Then I walk and leave. And when I walk back in at night, now it seems quiet. Now it seems empty. I've already filled the arena up earlier that day. So those are things that I do that keeps my cool, that takes away me overly amplifying and allows me to minimize the moment. I could just tell, man, and I kind of had some empathy for him, not as a fighter, because, you know, we both offer the same thing. He was trying to gain fame. I was trying to give glory. We were fighting for two different things. He couldn't beat me in that battle. You know what I mean?
How do people hear the new song? Where does it come out?
Friday's going to drop. World premiere. Earlier this week, I can't announce yet, but we're going to give a sneak peek of it on a very, very famous show by a very, very popular AM XM show. So we're gonna do a premiere, a world premiere on Friday. It's gonna hit all platforms. So I mean, anything you can download it on, Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, any person where you can download, drop a 120 now, whatever the hell it costs, it's gonna drop, and then it's gonna go ham, man. I sent it out to LLO, Nelly. I talked to Nelly today. We're probably gonna get in the studio today or tomorrow, working on some music. YBN Cardae, which is one of the dopest MCs out right now, young kid. Me and him are gonna collab on a song, you know, so everybody who's heard it, you know, that has no reason to shoot smoke on my ass, has all said this song is a banger. Somebody else, hey, somebody on the line right now, Name Hawani might have heard it.
That's right.
You know, so I'm just,
VIP.
I'm just excited about it. Only a few people have heard it, so I just want to get a lot of different opinions, and, you know, I haven't had one person say, no, I don't put it out yet.
You're the man, Tyron. Enjoy the week. Enjoy the release. Enjoy the victory. Enjoy the belt. I hope the hand heals soon. Keep us posted on what you end up doing. And as always, thank you so much for always coming on the show and being supportive and being loyal. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And again, congratulations.
No worries. Appreciate you guys.
All right. There he is, the welterweight champion of the Ultimate Fighting Championship, the one and only Tyron Woodley. He successfully defends his belt. On Saturday night, he wins via Darce choke again, his first submission in the UFC, his fourth successful title defense. He won the belt a little over 2 years ago, knocking out Robbie Lawler, and it really feels like to me, for the first time since his win over Dong Young Kim in Macau in August of 2014, this is the first time that the narrative is all about praising this man, appreciating this man. Remember the Kelvin Gastelum fight that was a split decision, there was all kinds of talk about weight. The Robbie Lawler fight should have been that case. But he called out Nick Diaz and GSP that night, and people were like, eh, and it took everything away from the win. Stephen Thompson draw, Stephen Thompson rematch, wasn't the most exciting fight, also majority decision, the Maya fight we know about, and now Darren Till. He needed to make an exclamation point, in my opinion. He did that. He is still the welterweight champion. We'll see what happens next. We'll talk to Colby Covington later on in the program. But first, let's move along to our next guest. What a huge win for him on Saturday. One of his most impressive performances ever. And that's saying a lot because no one has fought in the UFC more than him. 30 UFC fights, his 30th on Saturday. He won in Dallas via rear naked choke in just a minute and 29 seconds. We're talking to the veteran, Jim Miller, right now. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing really good. Thanks for having me on, bud.
Congratulations on the win. What a performance. Is it possible after 30 UFC fights that your best performance was the 30th? Is that possible?
Maybe, you know, I've been training to get better, you know, in these last 10 years. I mean, since I started MMA, but you know, in the UFC, I've been trying to get better every single day. You know, and it hasn't always been easy, but I feel like I've been doing it, and it was nice to go out and perform like I know that I can, you know, and kind of just really just take the pressure off myself and, you know that I still got that in me.
At what point did you know that you were making history with this fight? Is this something that you keep track of?
I knew that I was tied, you know, at 29. I feel like I could have already gotten the 30, like two fights ago. There were, you know, two occasions where, they shelved me a little bit to wait for, New York, New Jersey area cards. It was never like the goal. But I knew I'd just keep fighting and, you know, I don't turn fight down, you know? So, you know, I was just looking for fights and was able to stay healthy this long and get there.
No secret that you were on the 4-fight losing streak. You had not won since November of 2016. Did you feel like you were fighting for your job on Saturday?
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, there's definitely pressure, because of that you know, I mean, it's not the end of the world to get cut by the UFC, but, you know, I want to be here. I want to be competing against the guys in this division. And, I mean, there was pressure. pressure on me, and most of it was put on me by myself, knowing that I haven't performed in the last few fights, and really wanting to go out and do what I'm capable of doing.
What would have happened if things didn't go your way? Is it possible you would have retired?
I don't know. I don't think so. It probably would have been the end of the UFC for me. But I think I could have found a home someplace else. I've been feeling pretty good in these last couple months. And the thing is, you don't know what's going to happen fight night. You honestly don't. It really is a crapshoot when it comes right down to it, because you don't really control anything. I mean, you control how much, your effort, what you put into it, and your outlook, that's about it. I've had stupid things happen to me that were, injuring myself in a fight. It's just silly things that happen. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that I would not have retired if it didn't go my way, but fortunately it did.
That was your 29th pro win, but again, your first in almost 2 years. Is this something that you forget, like that feeling of getting your hand raised, that emotion, the jubilation? Did you miss that feeling? Did you forget what it felt like? How would you describe experiencing it after the layoff?
It's not something I forgot. More so, every time I'm in the cage, I'm trying to compete better than I can. I'm asking more out of myself than I know that I'm capable of. That's just my attitude, I'm always looking to do better. And I mean, even that fight, minute and a half, he still punched me. He still landed shots, and it's still one of those things that it wasn't perfect. It still wasn't perfect, and that's what I'm striving for. I've had tough outs where it's a heck of a fight, and been satisfied with it because I went out and fought as hard as I could for 15 minutes, and still lost. But I've had wins that were pretty crummy, I'm not very proud of them. That's just me, and that's the standard that I hold myself to. So it was fun to go out and to let it out again too, though. So be fired up about it.
You talked afterwards about battling the Lyme disease, and you've talked about this before, but you said that for the first time, it feels like your head is a little bit above water. And I'm wondering if you have a theory as to why. I know you say you fight this every day, and I know that, just following you on social media, you're constantly talking about it. I saw today even the photo that you posted, the amount of vitamins that you have to take. Why all of a sudden do you feel like your head is finally above water?
It's dealing with Lyme disease, it's not a quick fix. If you catch it early and you go on a course of antibiotics, you can get rid of it. Unfortunately, I had mine for, almost 3 years, before I was diagnosed with it and started a course of antibiotics. When it gets that hold on you and it gets that deep, it's difficult to get rid of. It's a long haul. It's a marathon, So I felt a lot better in 2016 when I was first started, my course of doxycycline. It was like, it was day and night, the difference, but I still wasn't like, healed, and I knew that, and I still wasn't able to train and compete like I had in the past. Starting this year, I kind of tried some different things and you know, was really diligent with my supplements and medication and stuff like that, because, like I said, it is a marathon, and sometimes shit gets in the way, man. And I mean, it's like I like to work out with an empty stomach, and I can't take my pills on an empty stomach, so so I always deal with the battle of, like, do I eat before training and then train like shit, or do I wait to take my medicine after training, but then sometimes forget, because then, you know, then you're dealing with family things and running around with the kids and all this stuff, so life just gets in the way. But you know, like I said, I've been pretty good with it, really, probably like end of February, beginning of March, really started seeing a change in the way that I was able to train, and I've been feeling good. And like I said, it's just about the consistency, you know, staying on the attack, you know, and like I said, being diligent with it.
Can it ever go away, or is it with you forever?
It can go away, and it can stick with you for a long freaking time. I mean, you know, I went back and I watched the fight, and I heard, you know, Logan talking about it, and him saying that my case is the worst he's seen, and you know, that's a little bit. I appreciate him saying that. I appreciate him seeing my struggle, but it's also heartbreaking to me, because I've seen and met people that have it tens of times worse than I do, you know, and it's made my life as a professional athlete more difficult. It's made my life as a father and a husband more difficult, and business owner and everything else. But I haven't had to give that stuff up. I've been able to, even scratching and clawing my way at points, to continue, you know, keeping those roles and keeping those parts of my lives. And there are people that they lose parts of themselves. They, people have to stop going to college. They have to quit their jobs. And even knowing what they have and trying to treat it, and their cases are just so bad. It's pretty rough, you know, when you look at it. And the worst part about the whole thing is that it's different for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really one of the biggest pains in the ass about it, is that there's no definitive test for it. There's no definitive treatment for it. You know, it's basically an individual thing. You know, and once you find out you have it, the way that you attack it has to basically be, you know, designed just for you, and you have to find what works for you.
Do you know exactly when you got it? It's from a tick bite, right?
Yeah. I wasn't sure for a while, and then you know, as I've become more educated about the disease, I'm pretty certain that it was probably in like May or June of 2013.
Wow.
I had a really weird couple weeks of, like, you know, I mean, to me, like, okay, a flu-like symptoms, stuff like that, you know, it's just, I'm not going to remember it, but I had like a really weird spell of like kind of extreme nausea, to where if I smelled anything like strong, I would get pretty nauseous and and dry heave and stuff. Like taking the garbage out, you know, changing one of the kids' diapers, stuff like that would set me off. And then I had like a series of migraines over a couple, like, it was like 2 weeks that I had like 10 migraines. And, you know, I went to an ENT, went to a neurologist, got tested, got an MRI done, all this stuff. They tested me for Lyme at the time. But I still actually, I don't test positive for Lyme. I'm one of the 50% of men that don't test positive for it. And it's even a less percent, of women that have it test positive for it. So, you know, if I had gone on a course of doxycycline at that time, I might not have had to deal with it, but, we just didn't know.
Wow.
And you know, that's just the way that it goes, and that's the issue with it. You know, not having a solid test for it too.
By the way, did you see that earlier in the week? I'm not sure if you're familiar. I don't think you're a fan of this type of music, but Avril Lavigne came out and said that she's battling Lyme mm-hmm. disease. Did you see this?
I've heard about it for quite a while. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, I mean, it's totally indiscriminate. You know, men, women, children, the elderly, it doesn't matter. An odd thing is that it seems that there are quite a few people in the music industry, performers and people close to them, spouses and stuff like that, that have been affected by it. Her story is pretty crazy.
When do you want to return?
I already asked Sean Shelby. I want to fight, again before the end of the year. I asked him for Milwaukee. I know there's a Vegas card coming up right after that, at the end of the year. Either one of those would be great.
Anyone in particular?
Nope.
I knew you were going to say that.
Doesn't matter.
And it's
doesn't
amazing.
Doesn't matter who it is.
What's so amazing is you said around, you know, May or June of 2013, I think you fought 13 times since then. You broke the record for most appearances, all while battling this disease that can cripple you, that can make you not want to do anything, let alone train for a fight. That's what I love so much about the fact that you're the one to now be the sole owner of this record. 30, it's just like, you know, the juxtaposition is just so incredible and speaks to your mental toughness. And there's some guys who are on your tail. I'm assuming you'd like to put a little distance between you and them, right?
It has nothing to do with that. You know, there are a couple guys that are right behind me, and they're going at a little bit faster pace than I am. I just like to fight, and at this point, there's so many other things. Like I got into that probably in like 2011 is when some of the training that we were doing was probably a little bit extreme. Too much live stuff like that. I started to get banged up and have to take time off after fights. I was too beat up going into fights. Particularly when I fought Kamal Shalrus. I mean, that was probably the closest I've ever been to pulling out of a fight. I was so banged up going into that one. So there was a time where I started taking time off, started taking a couple weeks off, and then it got really hard to get back into it, and both physically and just, like, life is in the way, you know? Like I said, I have four kids, so it's like you're running around between, you know, different extracurricular activities for every one of them, so there's always something to pull me away now, so I would rather just, you know, I'm going to get in as many as I can in the next, you know, 2 years or so, and let's do it. You know, it really doesn't. The record is cool, and being the first of 30 is really cool. It's not. It's not going to bother me if or when one of those guys, passes me.
For now, enjoy it. Enjoy the record. Enjoy the victory. So great to have you back, Jim, and keep doing what you're doing in terms of educating the public and speaking out on this. I know it's not very easy, but you're doing a great job and you're an inspiration. So
thanks
so much for doing this, Jim. All the best to you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
All right, there he is, Jim Miller. Big win for him on Saturday night. And now we look forward to seeing if he gets another fight by the end of the year. Before we get to our next guest, let me tell you about our good friends over at FanDuel. As you know, football season is finally underway. I'm very depressed. My Bills suck. I think they lost 65-0. But the good thing about fantasy football is that even though you hate your real team or your fantasy team, you could change it up every week. That's the beauty of it. You probably hate your team just like I do right this moment. Again, fantasy or real team. So on FanDuel, you can actually draft a new team every week. Plus, FanDuel has never been more fun or easier to play. If you're not a fantasy expert, then FanDuel is clearly the place to play. FanDuel is something for everyone, and there are more ways to win than ever before. FanDuel has a new tool called Guru to help you pick your lineups so you can make smarter picks and feel more confident going into game day. They made it easy to find your friends and challenge them to play head-to-head contests for cash or bragging rights. In fact, producer Jake has his own team. He told me that he killed it yesterday. He's number one in the world right now. That's how good he is. Killing it. He has a team full of New York Jets players. It's unbelievable. And how is he killing it? Well, I don't even know because the Jets haven't played yet in week one. I'm starting to think that he's lying to me. But nevertheless, he plays it and he tells me all the great things about it. So, draft all your favorite players. Switch it up. Don't be depressed if your team sucks. Just go to FanDuel.com/Ariel. That's FanDuel.com/Ariel for more. Please sign up. Support them because they support us. Now let us move along to our next guest. I know you're all dying to hear from him. The one and only Colby Covington is stopping by via the magic of Skype. There he is. Colby, how are you?
The champ is here.
Yes, there he is. I'm happy you brought the belt, Colby, because I thought Dana said that the moment a punch was thrown on Saturday night, you're no longer the interim champion. So what does that belt represent?
No one's taking this belt from me, Ariel. Let's be honest. Possession is 9/10 of the law. So you come beat me in that octagon. This belt is all mine. I earned this, fair and square.
So no one has told you that you're no longer the interim champion. In your mind, you are, and it's not going away.
No one's told me. You know, I am the real champion. There's a reason. You know, Woodley sat out for 13 months. How many fights has he fought in the last year? He fought one fight against an overhyped doughboy. I fought three fights against three of the top contenders. I earned this belt, so no one's taking this belt from me.
Did you watch UFC 228 and in particular the main event on Saturday night?
Of course. I had to see who was going to be number one contender to my strap.
Okay, what'd you think of Woodley's performance? He submitted Darren Till in the second round.
You know, it was average. He's definitely trying to step up his game from his past performances, you know, his boring snooze fest where he throws the least amount of strikes in welterweight title fight history. But, you know, I'm breathing down his neck now, so he knows he has to step up his game. So, you know, all the credit has to go to me for breathing down his neck and making him put on good performances.
Were you hoping that he won, considering the history between you two? Were you pulling for him?
Absolutely, man. My enemy became my friend last week, and I was jumping up and down once he won. I was excited. He didn't ruin everything I built. I built this money fight. You wanted a money fight. Here's your money fight, motherfucker, you little soy boy. You got nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. No more excuses. No more fake news out of Mr. Woodley.
He sent you a message earlier today. He was on the show, and the first thing he wanted to tell you was that you are a B word. I'm not going to say the full word, but I feel like you know what he's referring to. And he also said that, you know, he's the one that accepted the fight. You ran away, he said, because you needed to put some claret in. But he was here. You lost, you know, you lost the opportunity. You're the one who made Darren Till get beat up. So he doesn't really want to talk about you all that much because he's the one that accepted to fight you on September 8th and says that you're the one who didn't step up to the plate.
Yeah, I was also in a five-round fight a month before that. And, you know, I told him and the UFC that we could push that fight back a month later. But he didn't want to wait a month. He wanted to take the little overhyped doughboy from England. So he knew what he was getting himself into. He didn't want to fight me, Ariel. He could have waited 1 month. He could have waited 1 month. The UFC said jump. He said how high.
When you spent time with Dana White recently, when you guys were at the Oval Office, I know you talked before, did you ask them to clarify his stance on your belt? Because he has said to this outlet that you would be stripped come Saturday night. Did he go back on that?
I haven't heard anything about being stripped. You know, we know that that's not the undisputed belt that happened over the weekend. It's 100% disputed. There's no doubt about it. So I haven't heard anything, but I know this is the real belt. That was the number one contender fight. Now Woodley's got nowhere to go, Ariel. What excuses is he going to make now?
Have they told you when they'd like to make this fight?
No, they haven't told me when they'd like to make this fight, but it only makes sense that you go to the world's biggest arena for the world's biggest fight. Madison Square Garden, I know the Trumps want to come. I know they're right down the street. They'd love to come watch greatness and watch me make the UFC and the welterweight division great again.
Okay, so that would be November 3rd at MSG. That's what you want. And you're saying that the Trump family has told you that they will attend if the fight takes place there?
Yes, that is correct. Donald Trump Jr. reached out to me. He said, let me know if I'm going to be in New York for the Madison Square Garden show, and he would love to support me.
Wow. And what about the dad, senior, what did he say?
You know, He did say he's a little nervous of going to sporting events because, you know, you can't trust people these days. You never know. They might try and send a nuke on the stadium. So he likes to stay a little bit behind the scenes. And I don't know if he'll show up, but he'll definitely be tuned in and watching greatness.
You invited him when you met him?
I did invite him when I met him. I said, Mr. Trump, it would be an honor if you come sit front row for my next fight. And he said, you know, champ, I would love to come, but I'm a little bit nervous about going to sporting events, being in big arenas, because I get a little claustrophobic. So I don't know if he's going to be there, but I guarantee he will be having his eyes glued on the pay-per-view.
Have you kept in touch with him since you met him? You guys text each other, DM, I don't know, WhatsApp, anything?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm his biggest fan. I'm his biggest supporter. I'm here to make the welterweight division great again and America great again. So I've kept in touch with him and his son, Donald Trump Jr., so we have a good relationship.
Did you happen to see this video emerge on social media of Snoop Dogg watching the fight on Saturday night? And I think he thought that you were the one fighting Tyron Woodley because he was talking about Trump and all this stuff. Did you see this video?
I did see that video made by Calvin, that little California soy boy. He's funny, you know. I left a comment on his page, and he deleted it right away. I didn't know gangster rappers were living in safe spaces, Ariel. But it's pretty funny, you know. He is a little malnourished stick figure that looks like he's on Tourette's.
Okay. So you didn't take it personally, or did you?
No, I didn't take it personally. He's the dumbass that is thinking that I'm out there, I'm fighting it, and it's just, you know, he's just acting like a racist ass, you know. He's saying, oh, Black Lives Matter, oh, fuck Donald Trump, all this shit. What does that have to do with anything with that fight? He's fighting a guy from England. It makes no sense. The guy is uneducated. He doesn't believe.
Are you worried that the fight will lead to more talk like this, that it will become about more than just the fight, and maybe for the first time in UFC history that it will get a little tense and people will be picking side, honestly, just based off the color of your skin?
No, I got no fear. I'm not worried about anything. I'll let the marks out there decide which side they want to pick, and that's, you know, that's for everybody else to decide which side they're going to choose.
Tyron also wanted me to say that he thinks that you and someone named Josh Hartnett, who I've never heard of, need to work on better material. What's he referring to?
I have no idea what he's referring to, but anything that comes out of Mr. Tyron Woodley's mouth, you can't believe. He's a complete fake news source, so anything that guy says, you know, you can't believe anything that guy says. There's no truth to anything he says. He just says things to say them.
Who is Josh Hartnett?
I don't know who Josh Hartnett is. I've never heard of a Josh Hartnett. But I do know who a John Hartnett is.
Oh, John.
One of the greatest living Americans. He's one of the managers here at American Top Team, and he's an overall great guy.
Okay, does he help you with your career?
No, he doesn't help me. He's just, you know, one of my friends. We have a good relationship. We hang out. We go to pro wrestling shows together. That's about it.
Okay. Woodley, I don't know if you heard this, but he injured his hand in the fight. He doesn't believe it's broken, but might need some treatment on it. But he also said that Madison Square Garden could be possible. Do you feel confident? There's no main event for that card. Maybe your friend John Jones is also on the card. That would be interesting since he's talked about you again recently. Is this something that you actually feel will be possible? Because it is, you know, less than 2 months away.
Oh, Tyquil, did you hurt your thumb? Do you want to suck on your thumb? Maybe you should go take an Advil, bitch. Yeah, let's do this. Madison Square Garden, motherfucker, where you at now? Talked all that talk. Oh, you're so hard after the fight. You said you're ready for Madison Square Garden. Don't be giving that fake news out saying, now your thumb's hurt. What happened after the fight? I thought you were all good and you were ready to go to Madison Square Garden. So it needs to happen to MSG at the World Arena. Hulkamania started at MSG. Makes sense that I come back and make the World Trade Division great again.
That is true. It did start, I think, back in 1984. Now, how about your I know you had surgery, nose, breathing. Do you feel like you are 100%?
I do feel 100% now. I feel the best I've ever felt. I can actually breathe again. There's mucus draining from my nose to my lungs. You know, I don't have restricted breathing like I did in the RDA fight. So I'm a whole new animal, Ariel. You're going to see a whole new love by me. So none of these little marks in the division get a chance against me.
Is there a possibility, is there a fear that Usman, because he was the guy who was called to weigh in, all that, is there a possibility that he gets his number called before you?
That's hilarious, Aaron. You got good jokes, man. That's real funny, man. The only thing Usman's going to do, the only time Usman's ever going to see a title fight is how he saw the title fight last night. That's sitting on the sidelines like the little junior that he is. He's a little more aerial. All he does is sweat my nuts. The only thing he's going to do is watch me do great. He's not going to do anything. He's a little bit, and he's never going to be fighting the title fight. The only title fight he's going to see is from the sidelines.
What do you make of Till? Do you feel like it's time that he moves up to 185? Do you feel like he's depleting himself, that he's not fighting at his best at 170?
I think he's an overhyped machine. I think he beat a over-the-hill, old cripple clown boy. And then he got a gift decision in his hometown against Fire Boy. So, guy's overhyped. I don't really care about what he's going to do. He can stay at 70, go 85, go 55. He's not relevant, you know? He's got a bunch of fake followers and a bunch of fake interaction. That doesn't mean anything to me. So, you know, fuck him. And fuck him.
Why is Ben Askren coming after you on Twitter today?
Who?
Ben Askren, Funky, of ONE FC fame, the former Bellator welterweight champ. You're not familiar?
Nah, I'm not very familiar with that name.
Okay. By the way,
is he fighting the UFC?
No.
Does he have a UFC title?
No.
And I don't know why we talked about it.
Fair enough. What about your suits? Where are you getting these new suits?
I'm getting these suits from the best suit place in the business, Station, and also my boy Satori, this guy in Miami, one of the best suitmakers in the business.
Considering Woodley's ties to ATT, will you train at ATT as well for this fight? I know he doesn't train out of the South Florida gym, but he does have friends, you know, from Dan Lambert to coaches Dean Thomas, etc. What will you do if this is the fight that gets made?
I am Mr. American Top Team, so I'm not leaving American Top Team. You know, I'm in the Oval Office of American Top Team right now, Dan Lambert's creation. I will train at American Top Team. This is my home for the rest of my career. I started American Top Team from the ground up. I was built here, and I'm going to finish here at American Top Team. So, you know, if I have to switch up my training schedule, you know, go on different times when you know, all these guys that want to watch me and give advice to Woodley, you know, I'll do that. I'll train on my own separate times. I'll train on my own time. It won't be a problem. American Top Team and Dan Lambert make everything happen.
Okay. And how do we fix the relationship between you and John Jones? See, he recently came out and said that, you know, you're a liar. Like, it's scary how much you lie. And, you know, you guys used to be friends, used to be teammates, college teammates. How do we fix this? Is this fixable, or is this never going to get fixed between you two?
How's John doing these days, Errol? I'd really like to know that. Was he giving this interview from jail?
Stop it. Okay, so is that a no? You're not interested in fixing it. Did you lie about anything you said about John Jones?
Nope, I've never lied about one thing I've said about John Jones. Everything I've said has been to the fullest extent of the truth. You know, you can't believe anything that guy says. He's delusional. Look at the stuff he says. Oh, I'm God. Oh, this and that. Like, he shoots himself in the foot. Like, everything he says, like, you know, like, he's saying he's all this religious person, but he's hitting pregnant ladies, and he has all these drugs in the car, and he's hitting for the foothills, like, the little coward that he is. So, you know, the guy is completely delusional. I think all the drugs have rotted his brain, Ariel. So, you know, he needs to go get checked up with the doctor, make sure his chemical levels are balanced out right.
I thought that you would be in attendance on Saturday in Dallas, maybe with the belt, come in the cage afterwards, face-to-face. Why weren't you there?
Because I got better things to do, man. I was having threesomes. You know, I was on vacation. You know, I'm living my best life. So I didn't want to see that number one contender fight. I got better shit to do. I'm not trying to sell their pay-per-view. We all know that pay-per-view guaranteed sunk. It probably did 100,000 buys max. So, you know, it was a waste of my time. The only time you'll see me at a UFC event is when I'm fighting.
Oh, really? Okay, wow. That's interesting. Bigger.
I'll never be at a UFC event unless I'm fighting.
Really? Not even to support Dana? I feel like you guys are buds.
Not even to support who?
Dana White, your promoter.
Oh, yeah. You know, I support Dana. You know, I promote their fights. I put on Twitter and Instagram. You know, I was putting the hashtag to kind of sell their fight a little bit, but, you know, I'm not going to give events. There's too much drama. You know, I'm the show. I am Mr. UFC now, and when I come to UFC, it's only going to be good.
Bigger fight, McGregor, Khabib, or Covington Woodley?
What's that?
What's a bigger fight, McGregor, Khabib, or Covington Woodley?
Without a doubt, it's Covington Woodley. You know, the sides and the lines that are going to be drawn between that, the angle, the storyline. You know, we have a serious history, Ariel. We used to train together. Everybody knows that. You know, we know which sides we're talking about. You know, he's on the liberal soy boy side. I'm on the MAGA side. You know, there's just, it's too much juiciness in that fight. You know, the Conor Khabib fight, yeah, it's cool, but, you know, I mean, Conor's just looking for one day, you know, Khabib, you know, all he does is wrestle, you know, we're little lightweights. That's the JV squad. If they want to come up to the weight, come up to the varsity squad.
Wow, what a scene it would be. So November 3rd is what you're pulling for in New York, of all places, Madison Square Garden. They don't have a main event yet, so they need to, I mean, tickets are going on sale this week or next week. Yeah, you think that's it, huh? Wow, that would be something. What a scene it would be. Colby Covington against Tyron Woodley. I think it was Woodley's best fight in the UFC, maybe. But it sounds like you weren't all that impressed.
I wasn't impressed at all. I mean, he showed the same stuff he always shows. He backs up. He's looking for a right hand. He's predictable, Ariel. I mean, look at the way Nate Marquardt fought him. Knocked him out inside the clinch. You know, left him in a pool of his own little blood, unconscious. Rory McDonald stopped him down like a little prey, ate that little bitch up. So he's easy. He's a predictable fight. You know, it's when you got a little soy boy who's not ready to be in a position to fight that guy. You know, they don't know what they're doing. I know what I'm doing. I make everything look easy. All these guys, they talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk like me, Ariel.
I'm looking forward to this. Colby, I appreciate the time very much. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate you stopping by with the belt. I'm still not sure what to make of it all, but I guess that you've been told it isn't going away, so there it is. Champion versus champion, right? No one's
champion versus champion, baby. We know he ain't got the undisputed belt. This is the real belt. If he wants to come get the money belt, come see me November 3rd at MSG, Tyron Woodley. Stop faking injuries. Stop making shit up, fake news. Let's do this November 3rd.
Are you going to download his new single that's coming out this week?
Oh, my God. Dude, the guy had the perfect platform to shoot a promo on me and make this fight even bigger. Just like Dana said, he consistently shoots himself in the foot. He could have had the opportunity to shoot a promo and he's trying to sell his rap album. Ariel, come on, where's that going to debut on the charts? First song in the history of fucking songs? It's a joke. The guy's a joke. It's a fake news outlet. It's a joke. I can't wait to end him. I swear to God, I'm going to end his career.
Thank you, Colby. Good luck to you. Appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks, Sarah. Have a good one.
Same to you. There he is, Colby Covington, the one and only, stopping by. It would be a gigantic fight, and what a scene it would be here in New York City, of all places, if, in fact, it is Colby Covington versus Tyron Woodley on November 3rd. They've been teasing a big fight could be added. Is it John Jones? Well, the truth of the matter is they need big fights, plural, for that card, not just one. So they could add a bunch. This one. If John gets cleared, I don't know what's taking USADA. What is taking USADA so long? That's what I'd like to know about the USADA situation. What is taking USADA so long to just tell us, end the speculation, let us know, is he suspended for a year? Which would have passed up already. I mean, that it's been a year since last month. Is he suspended for two? Is he suspended for four? What could possibly be taking so long? I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea what is taking so long. Come out, end all the speculation. Let us know how long he'll be on the shelf for. His hearing for California was in February. It's September. What could you possibly be doing? Come on. Speed it up. Let's move along now to our next guest. Can't imagine how she's feeling. Second time in a little over a year, she has a title fight taken away from her in a matter of hours before the event. She called it from the beginning. Even on Thursday when I spoke to her at the media day, she said she'll only believe that her opponent, the then flyweight champion of the UFC women's division, Nico Montaño, she only believed that the fight would be happening if she saw her standing across from her in the cage on Saturday night. In the end, it did not materialize. Montaño withdrew on Friday morning, and Valentina Shevchenko once again was left without a title fight. She's kind enough to be joining us right now on the phone. Valentina, how are you?
Hello, Ariel. I'm fine. Thank you.
I really appreciate you doing this. And again, I can't imagine how you're feeling after this happening for a second time in a little over a year. Could you describe the moment that you heard that this fight was getting called off? Because again, you had been saying all along that you didn't believe it would happen. But then once you heard that it was a reality, how did you feel?
It was like I already started to actually believe that it's happening, and I will like step into the octagon on Saturday night. And when I heard that no, I could not believe it. Like, again, no, it's like, oh, something that I was really expecting, and I start to have in my mind that maybe a replacement, maybe something like other options we can find. And it was early morning that I received this, not so early, like a little bit before 9, before the official weigh-in. So I was finishing my training, losing last pound for official weigh-in. So I just like, I was thinking, okay, I will go to the scale and do my like last, my job, to show up, to weigh in, and to see maybe UFC will have any replacement for me to make this fight happen. So I was hoping till the very, very last moment that they will be able still find some opponent and replacement for me. But unfortunately, it didn't happen. So now I will just wait again a little bit more, and hopefully we will have some name soon for the fight for the title, and I will start my preparation after a little bit, and just with more motivation and more like good mood, I go into it and wait for the opportunity to show everything from me.
Do you agree with the UFC's decision to strip Nico?
Yes, I agree with the decision, and I think it's totally right, because like I say, what is the main purpose of the fighter, of the person who was contracted under UFC? It's to fight. It's not build the name. It's not create stories, not to speak with the media, but it's also important for the fighter. But the main purpose, the first, what she has to do, is to fight. Be able to show up and make her wait for the title fight, for any fight, to make the weight, to do everything that she has to do, and finally to show up in the octagon. And if the fighter, she cannot hold this pressure, because yes, of course, it's a lot of pressure from every side, from media, from opponent, from everyone. If you cannot hold it, if you are like still not ready, you have to step out. You have to step out from all this business and make people do their business, what they are like really want to do, and who are ready to fight, ready to do all responsibilities. Be more professional and much responsible for your actions, for every action.
Nico posted something on Instagram yesterday. I just want to read you a quick part of it and get your response. She said, "This was the only time I signed a contract, so the statements that this egomaniac Valentina has said are completely false and nowhere near the truth. Her idea of reality is so far-fetched, so the fact that she trained for me 3 times must mean a couple of things. She's obsessed with me, and she has too much time on her hands. Not only has she been disrespectful and jealous of my efforts and accomplishments, also blocking me first on Instagram during her first fight at 125, but the fact that she takes pride in kicking a person while they're going through surgery and having their kidneys shut down truly demonstrates what a martial artist should not demonstrate." What do you think of that?
It's the second time for this day when I heard this this quote, but it makes me laugh so much, because now she has all time in the world to speak, create her stories, to invent facts. Everything what she wants to do, she can do it now, because now she don't have to face me, she don't have to fight me, and she can feel a little like more free to express her words and speak. It looks like her favorite thing. So, first of all, like about before for the fight, it's totally false. It's not true, because she is the one who chose this date, September, because when we just starting to speak about possible fight for the title. Her team, they said, Nico can be ready for end of the May and or beginning of June. And of course, when I hear this, that she can be ready for the date, I start my preparation. Okay, but like UFC wanted to make it happen a little bit later, and then they signed a friendly contract for July 28th. I signed my part, so I had contract, and why I don't have to start my preparation? I signed it. Okay, yeah, but she is the one who started to, at that moment, started to speak about International Fight Week, July. Even having like July 28th, she started to speak and brought up this July 7th International Fight Week. Okay. Doesn't matter. But after, when already, like, we were speaking about July 28th, she turned out it and said she who posted on social media, Valentina, let's do it September 8th. And I said, like, okay, I can wait. I was waiting for 6 months. I can wait 1 month more. So this is, was the reality. Now she is messed up everything to change in fact, creating her own story, and more like interesting that she's starting to believe in their own, in her own stories. It's so funny. It's very funny. But you know how I say, like, the action of the person is showing who is she. The action is the most important. If you are like speaking good, it's good. Yeah, you are a good person. You can speak good. Nothing take out everything from you from this. But if you are cannot do your job, your main job, be on the weight and fight, you cannot say nothing because that action is action. And this is like the reason why she was stripped out from UFC. Now she is saying about like, okay, I need more time to make me lighter and feel me comfortable to walk in this weight. How long she needs? 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? How long she won't hold the belt for nothing and like just speak, not doing any action? For how long? And it doesn't work this way. It doesn't work like this because this is top level competition is different level of competition here. It's a high level competition. If you are cannot hold this pressure, I say just step out. If you are not ready for this, step out. Don't do the complication. Don't do the problems for everyone, for organization who are giving you everything, who are giving you like the most that you can ask. Just don't confuse people, not fans who are wanted to see the fight, not make it like unprofessional. It's these actions, it's totally unprofessional and irresponsible. It's not the way how real athletes, real fighters acting.
Valentina, do you believe that she had a problem with her kidneys, that she had trouble making weight, or do you feel like she looked for a way out?
You know, like showing up for in the fight week, being 20 pounds over, it's totally irresponsible. And I see the only one reason why the person do it. And we are speaking about girls. We are speaking about female body. It's, okay, maybe boys, they are different. They can cut like 15, 20 pounds in like this short time. But girls, they cannot do it. And every girl, that she knows it. Everyone knows that 20 pounds, it's too much. And be such irresponsible, it's being totally unprofessional. Okay, if you are cutting for one night so much like weight, maybe it will provoke some like health issues. But the question, why? Why you are like knowing that it's not good, for your health, and you will not be able to make the cut weight good and smooth for you? Why you are holding this situation till this moment? Why? This is the most important question. And I think, like, even she's speaking, like she's speaking right now and, like, crying that now she's, everyone, like, has have a fault. Everyone have fault that she could not make a weight. But who is the number one responsible for making the weight cut good for you? It's an athlete. she knows her body. She knows the body how it's reacting, and she knows everything about her. And it's totally like false that now she is speaking that she it was surprise for her that it was too much weight for her. It's not true. And like speaking like this, and it's just showing that the actions that she did is totally unprofessional.
Is the UFC taking care of you? Will you be paid for last weekend?
Yes, I know that my manager, Roger, he was speaking with UFC, and they're taking care of everything. So about this part, I never was worried, because if they are saying, we are taking care of you, they will take care of you. And usually they are have a good care about their athletes.
Do you have any idea what that means, taking care of? Like how much you're getting, your full purse, half of your purse? Do you have any idea?
You know, I'm not worried about this at all. For me, I'm worried about the name.
Uh-huh.
This is what's important for me. The name, and sooner I will have the name, sooner I will start my preparation. Because I'm a fighter. I'm not here just to speak with the media and like spend all my time in this one. But I say every time it's very important for a fighter. She and he, they, everyone has to do it. But the main purpose is to fight. And I'm here to fight. And I can't wait to step in the octagon and to fight. For me, it doesn't matter who will be in front of me, because I'm a real fighter and I want to show all my skills. I want to show my art for everyone who supports me and make them happy.
Would you ever accept another fight against Nico, or at this point you're moving on forever?
You know, I'm moving on. And if in some point she will show that she deserves it for this fight, that she really like know where she's going, and she is ready for this fight, I think she is just not ready for this fight. But if in the future she will show it, I will think about it. Because for now, I can see only one thing. She is not only ready for this fight, but everything that she get, it was too soon for her, and she just not ready for all of this. Not just fight. I'm not speaking only about the fight. I'm speaking about the pressure, responsibility, and everything that come together with the belt of UFC.
I wrote on Friday night, Valentina, that to me there's only one option to get this division on track. And what I mean by on track is there's been two title fights in the division's history. And before the first one in December, Sajara Eubanks failed to make weight. And before the second one, the champion failed to make weight. And I think that they need some time to build up the division. You certainly deserve and have earned a shot at the belt. And I feel like there's only one other person against you that can help get this division on track, and that's Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who they talked about having move up to 125, who is not going to get a third crack at Rose Namajunas. There's a history between you two. Do you agree that the fight that makes the most sense, the biggest fight, the fight that gets this division on track, is you versus Joanna in MMA for the first time?
You know what? I am ready for everyone, and like you say exactly, and I was repeating several times, we are already have our history with Joanna and in Muay Thai, but also we can start our history in MMA under UFC rules. So why not? Why don't do this fight? And even like all fans, they wanted to see this fight. And of course, the division has to move. Division has to fight, and the belt has to be in the play. It's the belt. It's not just to hold. It's not like just to stay in and like showing like here I am staying. No. It has to play, and for sure, I think their like fight for the belt, it has to happen before the end of the year. It's like I have no doubt, and I will gladly fight Joanna because she is really professional fighter, and she has like all kind that a fighter has to have, and it will be very nice fight, very excited fight, very expected fight for every people, every person, and every fan of martial arts.
Do you feel like that's the best option, or is there someone else on your mind?
You know, I don't think about like names because I really don't care. I'm not every name that you see will bring me, I will accept because I don't care who fights. It's not no one forced me to fight with anyone. I'm ready for anyone. Doesn't matter who it will be. I'm ready. If you are ready, you are ready. So it's not depends who will be in front of you.
Have they told you when they would like for you to fight? Dana said on Friday that they were already working on, you know, you getting back in there and finally fighting for that belt. Have they told you when they're trying to make this happen?
I don't have a date yet. I don't have a month yet. So if it would be just depends on me, I would like to fight the sooner the better. I would like to fight tomorrow, after tomorrow, so I'm ready. But not everything like depend on me, and it also depend on my opponent or about her preparation. So, truly and more reality, I expected fight to be some days in November, December.
Okay. He also said that they were working on someone in particular. Do you know who that is?
No. I still don't know nothing because it's passed just like so less time. It's just a little time since everything was happened this weekend. So I think to have more details on this week, by the end of this week, I think we will have more worked out.
It's very rare for a fighter to go through this twice in the span of a year. You just went through it with Amanda Nunes 2 Julys ago. Did that experience help you deal with this a little better?
I never go with my mind in too deep in these things, because if you are start to think and leave all these emotions, it will put you back. It will it every time will hold you and without letting you move forward. And just like emotionally, I already pass it, and I keep in moving me forward. I already start to focus me on my future. I start to focus me on the things what I have right now. So I don't take too much close to me to what this happened. Of course, it's all this days of preparation, all these months of preparation, all this time of hard training, I pass it. But now I will rest a little bit. I will take energy back to me, and with more motivation and more dedication, I will start to prepare for the next fight. And for sure, I know one thing, that for next fight, I will be better than I am right now. So each experience doesn't matter. What kind of experience, it makes me better and better every day.
Last thing for you, Valentina. And again, thank you so much for coming on the show once again. I'm sorry it's under these circumstances, but it's always great to talk to you. What, if anything, is your message to Nico Montano? She loves our show. She listens every week. What would you say to her right now?
I don't want to say her nothing, because for me it's already step that I did. I make the step, and it's she's already on my path. I already focus on new things, and she can do whatever she wants to do. She can have all the time that she wants to do, to create her stories, to invent facts, to mess everything up. And I have no doubt that she will do everything like this. But for me, I'm keeping forward and I'm moving forward. I focus on my future actions. But the one thing that I want to say is I want to say thank you very much to each fan of mine for their support. I know that a lot of people, they was coming to this fight. They was expecting to see me fight and hold this belt, and I feel very frustrating for them, and I'm more upset for them than for me. And one time again, I just want to say thank you very much for all your support. I know it's for sure, it's very important for me to have all of you on my side, and I can't wait the opportunity to show my skills, my art, my martial art on the next fight, and make everything like good, and just for make them happy.
Thank you very much, Valentina. You're a professional. You're a class act. I'm sorry this happened once again, but I'm looking forward to seeing you finally fight for that belt later on this year. Appreciate you doing this.
Thank you very much, Ariel. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Same to you. There she is, the Bullet, Valentina Shevchenko, the queen without a crown. She ends up not fighting on Saturday. And I know a lot of the female flyweight fighters, and we could talk about this on the post show, are mad at me for saying that there's only one option to get this division on track, and that's Joanna. I mean, she's a former champion. She just won. It's not like she's coming off a loss. And let's not pretend like there isn't this history of someone coming from another weight class and getting an immediate title shot. I brought up Frankie Edgar, who lost twice to Benson Henderson, and then he ended up fighting Jose Aldo, UFC 156. Of course, we know about Conor. Like, this isn't the craziest idea of all time. This division is 9 months old. There's been two title fights. Both have been marred by weight class or weight-cutting issues. Some of the other fighters need to get some wins, get some momentum, get some attention behind them. And let's just call it like we see it. There were some fighters who were calling out Valentina on Friday to gain some attention but weren't ready and willing to take that fight on 24 hours notice. And that's just the truth. And it didn't make much of a ripple. The Joanna fight would be the biggest fight. She's talked about going up to 125. She's a former champion, one of the winningest female fighters in UFC history. She's coming off a win over a great fighter. Bump her up and let's go. That's the biggest fight. It's no disrespect, but that's the biggest fight, and there's no doubt about it. One of the big stories on Saturday night, Aljamain Sterling getting back on track with his second win this year. What a year it has been for him after the way 2017 ended, but what a submission it was. Wow. I keep watching that thing. I have no idea what happened. Let's talk to him right now about it. Aljo, how are you?
Doing well, Ariel. How's it going?
I'm doing great. Congratulations on the big win. You're still in Dallas, right?
I'm still out here in the country. Good old Dallas.
Why? Why'd you stick around longer?
Well, I want to check out the city a little bit, check out the good eats that I constantly hear about down here. And I heard it's always bigger in Texas, so
yes.
Trying to find out if it's really true or not.
Okay. Well, good luck with that. I appreciate you squeezing us in for a few minutes here. I couldn't believe it when you said it. That was your first submission in almost 3 years. Wow. For someone who's known, you know, as the Funk Master and all that, and that's how we kind of got introduced to you, that's a long time. That must be the best part about all of this, not just that you won, but that you won via sub, and especially a funky one.
Yeah, for sure, man. It's been a long time coming, and, you know, I prided myself on being a finisher. I got to the UFC because I was a finisher, you know. I was finishing guys third round, second round, and first round, and it was just getting better and better. And then I just hit a little wall, man. You know, the competition gets tough, of course, but even with that being said, man, you got to go out there and put on entertaining fights because that's what the fans want to see, and that's what's going to sell, you know. So that's what I pride myself on doing, man. 3 years, three freaking long years.
I remember talking to you after the Brett Johns win back in April, and that was the first fight after the Marlon fight, and just talking about, you know, getting the cobwebs out and getting back on track and things like that. Did you feel a lot more comfortable and like you didn't have to overthink things because, all right, you got that one fight in between out of the way. Now you could just get back to finishing and being yourself and fighting at your best. Like, did that one fight in between, did you feel a lot difference between this fight and the one in April because that was coming off the knockout?
Not so much. I mean, at the end of the day, I try to keep everything in perspective. I got knocked out, but it wasn't like a one-sided ass whooping. People can say whatever they want. At the end of the day, Marlon even said it himself. He didn't intentionally try to kick me in the face. He threw a body kick, switch kick, and I shot from Guam, like I said before, and the ref intervened, and then when he broke it up, I just shot. I got emotional, and you know, I just wanted to get the fight down to the floor, and I just went out pretty much instantly. And, you know, so it goes like that sometimes. So coming back from that, I knew I had a chin. I was taking shots in training, and I didn't spar that much because I wanted to give my brain more time to recover, because you know once that's gone, that's it, man. Your skill set, doesn't matter how good you are, that does not come back from being depleted. So I made sure I did the right thing. I think I only sparred for the Brett Johns fight like 4 times, if that, and I wrestled the guys to death. So that's pretty. You know, that's I'm just doing a smart thing by myself, my future, my longevity and career wise. So that's the way I looked at that. And this fight, I did feel a lot more comfortable. Just I saw everything coming, man. I felt like the guy had nothing for me. You know, it was interesting because I was a little nervous. I get nervous before every fight, but I was a little nervous with Cody because I was like, man, this guy's talking a really big game. It's either he's gotten a lot better than what I've watched on these last 3 fights of his, or he's just a very good poker player. And just, you know, but you know, I called his bluff. So, like I told him at the weigh-ins, I was like, you're not going to like it when I take you down. You're sitting here doing MMA math, talking about our fights with Caraway. I like to think that my fight was a lot more, I think it was just better than his, as I said, the easiest way to put it. So I went out there and did my thing, man, and got funky with it, put him in a funk strudel.
Okay, so there's a couple of things there that I want to ask you about. First, before we get to the submission, did you have trouble making 135 this time?
Oh, my God. It was brutal. You know what's so crazy? I got there when my weight was in a good spot. I had a ton of energy getting there, working out with Al on the first day. But I left Monday 145.5, and I was down to 4.37 body fat percentage, getting checked right after with the ultrasound. And, man, I was like, yo, I don't know how the hell I'm going to get down. But, you know, I was pretty hydrated. I was like 70% water. Tony Ricci told me, Fight Shay Ricci. He helps us out with our strength and conditioning and those kind of things at the gym, checking out BMI and all that. And, you know, I got down. I felt great. I thought it wouldn't be a problem. I know I was really hydrated, but the last day I didn't work out Thursday. I tried it because I hit it hard on Wednesday doing 2 workouts. And I got my weight down, but I was still stuck at like 40. I think it was like 40.5 or 43, something like that. And then that last day, man, I did all the last few pounds in the hot tub, 4.5 pounds in the hot tub. Friday morning, woke up at 6:50, and that 1 hour, man, I mean, I got it off like a champ, but I was delirious, man. I was like dry heaving a bit. It was I felt like that was the worst it's ever been. I mean, I know Al was there, two of my other teammates, Dennis Bazooka and James Gonzalez, but I don't think they've ever seen me like that. That was hurting, man. I was hurting pretty good and cramping up, I think, all throughout the night until probably the next yeah. So Saturday morning, I was cramping up pretty bad.
Wow. So is it possible your days of fighting at 135 are coming to an end?
I doubt it, man. You see a guy like the Beat, Brandon Davis. You see those yeah. big those mofos, man. Those guys are huge. They got big frames, man. I mean, I'm strength wise, I could probably compete with them, like pound for pound, like squeezing strength and all that. But when it comes to like the height disadvantage, and I don't know, I don't think that would be a smart career move for me. It would have to be, I would have to pick good fights that would help me get to a good position in the division. But I think I just gotta up my fat intake and lay off the weights, man. I definitely can't be lifting any more weights. I think we're gonna have to reassess everything. I'm super lean, man. For me, my last fight with Brett Johns, I got up to 168.5, literally 1 week after the fight. This week, I'm trying to do the right thing, but I'm eating all this good Texas food. I just left chicken scratch, and I told my girl, I was like, I'm gonna go get a salad. And the next thing you know, I got some, I got the biscuits with the gravy,
yes.
and fried.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm trying to do the right thing, but it's hard. It's hard, Ariel.
Did you throw up right before the fight?
Oh, who's someone? I guess I kind of snitched on myself.
Yes. What happened?
Yeah, in the back room, I was having these crazy acid refluxes, and I was like, "Yo, this would be insane to get pulled off of this card if anybody comes in here and sees me throwing up or hears me throwing up." And yeah, it was insane, man. It was literally 15 minutes before the walkout, and I was like, "Yo, this is not good. I can't have this happen in the cage. I can't have this happen while I'm walking to the cage. I got to try to get this out, and hopefully my stomach settles before I walk back out, man." And thank God it did, because that's not a comfortable feeling to go out there and fight. You just try to fight through something like that. It's really hard to breathe, and it's the burning sensations. You know, it's just tough. Very extremely difficult, man. I've never experienced anything like this before, I think, I don't know. Like I said, I got to make some adjustments or something because I don't know. It was weird. It felt like my throat was just burning the entire time. I burped and then
wow.
I felt like everything was coming up. There's like just straight up bile. You know, I only ate once. I ate breakfast. I had some OJ. I guess that probably triggered some things. I don't know. I'm not a scientist with this, you know. I don't know how this works. I just fight. I just punch people.
All that makes your performance even more impressive, in my opinion. So let us talk about the finish. You can't really do it over the phone, but to the best of your abilities, can you explain how you pulled that off? Like, what are the steps to getting a submission like that?
So right when you're on the back, if you look up while you're putting the arch and you see the sunset rising, you can see this spectacular vision. I don't know where I was going with that.
Oh, my God. I was like, holy crap, this is amazing.
no, but on a serious note. All right, so this is something I tried to hit on Barao, and that Barao fight, I kind of just freestyled it, and I was like, yo, I think I might be able to pull something off like this. And then I went to training, and I tried it a few times, and I've actually hit it a couple times in jiu-jitsu class. And then, so when I'm in that position, normally I hit it like Zabit does. I fall off to the side, and it's almost like a banana split, and you reach over, and you go underneath the leg, and you pull it. And it's supposed to be a lot of pressure on the hamstring. But with this variation, I had the hooks in so deep, and I didn't want to let my legs go because I knew I had the dexterity to keep it like that, that when I was able to reach underneath, I kind of just wrenched his leg. Honestly, I was just in the zone. I was just mean with it, I guess. It's kind of fucked up, to be honest. But I kind of just, it was bad. I reached down for the ankle, and I know he was super tough the first time when I tried to flatten him out. But he came back up to his base, super strong legs. Then I flattened him out. He came back again, and I was like, all right, this time I'm just going to go for it. If I fall off, we're just going to end up in a scramble. And I'll probably end up in a leg lock or something, like inverted or something like that. And we just keep fighting from there. But got into that position, and then he started falling backwards. I guess he was trying to shake me still. But as he was shaking me, I kind of bumped him over to the side. And that's when all his weight just collapsed on the side of his knee, and I heard it pop instantly. And I was like, yeah, this is done. And I let it go. For like a split second, I was just going to start going to like the bitch, like just to let off some crazy ground and pound. And he's a tough dude. I thought he was going to, I didn't think he was going to quit. I thought he was going to try to fight through the pain. But I know what that feels like. I've done it twice in wrestling season to both legs. And I can only imagine, man. I feel like he probably tore a couple of things in there. You know, I hope he didn't. You know, that sucks to be out for with an injury like that for that long. But hopefully it's just a strained LCL, you know. But, yeah, man, that shit was nasty. Every time I watch it, I kind of cringe because I know the pressure, the amount of pressure that goes on with those knee bars like that. So it went from a hamstring lock to like a groin stretch to pretty much you get the effects from an inverted heel hook that puts the pressure on that knee through the Achilles. You pretty much got that from that position right there, just from all the weight and the torque into the direction that I pulled it.
Now, who did it better, you or Zabit?
Well, the beats was pretty because it was a banana split. It was like a straight-up split, which was cool because you kind of – and it went inverted in the camera. Mine, you didn't get to see, like, the damage control because it was upside down. If you saw from the side when he switched the angle from the UFC replay, it looked cooler from that side. But the back position, you don't really get to see the beauty of the actual jiu-jitsu move or what was actually going on. So I guess the beats looked prettier on paper, but mine was more damaging, I would say. Okay. I think I'm going to do a breakdown of this when I get back tomorrow and record it and put it up on my YouTube channel.
Okay, we look forward to that. Now, before I let you go, I have to ask, afterwards you said winner of Rivera Dodds. And by the way, you were on fire. Like, the fight was great, the finish was great, and then you just, like, took the baton. You already knew what you wanted next. You were on fire on the mic, so great job all around. You said Rivera Dodson, but that fight kind of just, like, happened and no one's really talking about it, or... You said you wanted to slap the SH blank blank out of Dominic's mouth, which is interesting because are you saying that he has, because you know it's like Happy Gilmore, like eating, you know, pieces of SH for breakfast. Like, no one really has SH in their mouth, if you get what I'm saying. But anyways, I like the call out. Why are you mad at him? What's the issue there?
I'm not necessarily mad at him, but I think he kind of at this point in the game, I think he feels he's a little, I think he's a little too entitled to feeling that he deserves a title shot after a one-sided loss and getting, you know, he got beat around from pillar to post in the cage against Cody Garbrandt. And Garbrandt just got starched twice by TJ. And then you don't fight for 2 years and then you think you're just going to sit and let all the real contenders and who the guys who are really putting in the work come out, fight each other, and eliminate each other so that you can say, all right, well, I'm the last guy standing because I was out. No, bro. You know, fuck that. You gotta fight and you gotta stay relevant. I understand you're doing the commentating thing and you think that's your best way of staying relevant, but, bro, we're fighting. We're the one putting in the work. You got Marlon out there. He's killing guys. You got even a Sunshine who's out there fighting guys. And he may not be the most exciting guy in terms of, like, talking or anything like that, but these guys are legitimate contenders. These guys are tying up the division with all these immediate rematches. And then you got this guy coming in here not fighting in 2 years and just – it's stupid. Keep the division going. Let somebody get some new blood get in there. Eventually, I'm going to get my turn and get my crack. And like I said, man, I want to fight the best guys in this division, and Dominic Cruz is one of them. He is a legend of the sport. And to be able to say I took out two legends would be a huge, huge feather in my cap. Only one guy took him out, you know, in the bantamweight division. So I would like to be the second guy if he doesn't get the next shot at the title. So that Rivera fight, that shit sucked. Nobody. After I was excited about getting the winner of that, and then I watched it, I was like, yeah, boo. I don't want to fight either one of those guys to get that. Give me John Lineker or something. I don't know. I want to fight somebody who's gonna make it a fun fight. And if I gotta chase Rivera around or Dodge, I don't know. I'm just gonna do what I do best, man. I'm gonna take these guys down, put the pressure on them, and like I said, man, I get the hooks in. I'm a nightmare for anybody on top. So even off my back, bro, dude, I'm just ready to beat up some Bantam Puffs, dog. That's really what it is. I'm ready to beat up the Bantam Puffs.
Great stuff, Aljo. Really enjoyed it. You nailed it from, you know, you made weight great, even though you had the issues, but the fight itself, the submission on the mic, just great stuff. I know you're out there doing your thing in Dallas, so I appreciate you joining us. Enjoy the victory. Enjoy Dallas, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, man, and make sure you guys tune in and watch my weight cut from Fight Week, UFC 228, on my YouTube channel or MMA Junkie. Go check it out, The Funk Chronicle.
Damn, that's dog. Crazy. Coming on the show and plugging other outlets? I'll let it slide. It's all good. It's all good.
Wait, they did my editing. You're not doing my editing.
All right.
My editing.
Much love. I will check it out on MMAJunkie.com. I will check it out. Only love for the others.
Or my YouTube. Oh, go check my YouTube channel. All right. How about that? Go check my YouTube channel.
Aljo, thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon. There he is.
Thanks, Jerry.
Funk Master himself, big win for him. Now, Henry Cejudo told ESPN's Phil Murphy on Saturday that it's getting closer. It's getting closer. The TJ fight is getting closer. Does that free up Dominic Cruz? I don't know how I feel about that fight being made after, you know, Cejudo just won the belt and Dillashaw just defended it once. I do feel like there are a lot of other contenders in line right now. But if that's the direction that they're going to go in, that would free up a Dominic Cruz. Now, do they go with Dominic Cruz versus Marlon Moraes? That obviously makes a lot of sense. You got to give Aljo props for shooting his shot. I do think him versus Jimmy Rivera would make a lot of sense. A nice East Coast battle there, maybe on the MSG card, although that is rapidly approaching. It is less than 2 months away. But there are options. Bantamweight is a lot of fun these days. And that's precisely why I want the champion to defend his belt. I want to see TJ against the likes of Dominic Cruz, Marlon Moraes, Rafael Sunsau. I feel like there are a lot of options there at 135 as opposed to having him go down to 125 or even having Henry Cejudo go up to 135. So we shall see. All right, my friends. I'm so excited about our next guest. I've been bothering this man for the last 2 months, every single week asking him to come on the show. And now the stars have finally aligned. He's got a lot going on in his life these days. He is a co-host on Ultimate Beastmaster on Netflix. He is a man of many talents. He is my friend and yours, Mr. CM Punk. How are you, sir?
I'm lovely. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a while. It's been a couple of months. It feels like it's been longer. I really appreciate you doing this, though. I know a lot of people have been hitting you up. As always gracious, always very accommodating, so I really appreciate it. Ultimate Beastmaster on Netflix. We have a lot to talk about, but let's talk about that first and foremost. What is Ultimate Beastmaster?
Yeah, so you know, first of all, how much time do I have? Because I know Pearl's next, and I don't want to cut into Pearl's time.
You're a big Pearl fan, aren't you?
I'm a huge Pearl fan.
Don't worry. She will wait for you. You got all the time in the world.
All right, I don't want her mad at me.
No, no.
Okay, so Ultimate Beastmaster is Netflix's, God, I don't even know what to call it without dropping a name that I know that the producers there don't like me to say, but if you're a fan of like obstacle course shows like Ninja Warrior,
yeah,
you'll be a fan of this because not only am I on it, but Anderson Silva is one of the co-hosts for the Brazilian version of it, but you can still watch him on the American version. It's a crazy obstacle course where athletes from all over the world, all different kinds of countries, all different sorts of disciplines, show up to try to conquer the beast. And it sounds a little silly, me saying that, but you have to see it to believe it. I was a little skeptical until I rolled up on the thing. It's in the middle of the desert in California. The thing is gigantic, and it's impressive to see the entire structure, and it's like a jungle gym out of a child's imagination. It's pretty wild.
And so the co-host for the American version, you and Tiki Barber, of course, the former great New York Giant player, but there's, as you mentioned, all kinds of hosts all over the world, UK, Australia, Brazil, Germany, France, Italy, Mexico, South Korea, Anderson Silva, a host out of Brazil, the likes of Danny Minogue out of Australia. So it's this international thing. Now, can I watch the entire thing on Netflix from start to finish right now, or is it rolling out week to week? I know it started back on August 31st.
Yeah, I think that's the brilliant thing about anything on the Netflix platform is when it drops, it drops. You can binge watch every single episode.
Now, I would like to see you compete in this as we're looking at some of the highlights from it right now they provided to us. Are you in any of the obstacle course races, or are you just the talking head off to the side?
No. The way it is all of the commentators who represent every single country are kind of in the round in front of the beast. So everybody's there live calling the action as it goes down. And it was a liability thing. They wouldn't let any of us touch the obstacle course until we were done shooting. And then we were all too tired to do it. So much respect to all the athletes who actually got to run that course.
You're usually the guy doing the physical stuff. Is this part of the transition for you, being the broadcaster, the talking head? Do you enjoy that more than doing the actual physical stuff?
You know, I think I've always kind of dabbled in being that talking head and doing things like commentary, and it's something I enjoy if I get to call action of things I actually like. Mm-hmm. And this is no different. You know, I feel in the same vein as a lot of the other stuff I've done in my life, like pro wrestling and comic books and fighting. I mean, there's a fighter from Great Britain who competes on the show. He was amazing, and I'm not going to say anything else about him. If you're an MMA fan, you have to watch the show. He'll automatically be your favorite.
Okay, wow. How many episodes are up right now? Do you know?
All of them. I'm not sure if they did it in. I think it's just 10. It might be 8 or 10.
Okay. Netflix.com. I'll find it. Netflix.com/Ultimate Beastmaster is where you can see more about the new show. And you mentioned comic books, all the other stuff that you're doing, filming a bunch of movies. How many things are you doing right now? I feel like you're doing a lot.
I'm doing too many things. This is like my first real day off in a while. I wanted to get on your show earlier. You know, I it would have made a lot more sense to do some PR for Beastmaster on the 31st when it dropped, but I've been in the middle of a 20-day movie shoot, and it's pretty hectic.
And by the way, it's 9 episodes, and they're all up right now on Netflix. What movie? Could you tell us about the movie or not yet?
Yeah, I can tell you all about the movie. This is, let me see here. I actually, the movie I'm on right now is called Girl on the Third Floor. It's a horror movie. I don't know. You might get scared, Ariel. I don't know. You'll watch that. Your children certainly can't watch it yet. But I'm super excited about it because the producers of this movie have done a lot of movies that I like. We Are Still Here, House of the Devil, and Deathgasm. And if you're a horror movie fan, like those three over the last 10 years have been the forerunners of some pretty good horror movies. So I work with really great actresses. The director's brilliant. He's produced a lot of awesome things like Udarowski's Dune. And I'm just geeking out about the whole experience. So it's my first lead role, obviously, and I'm just trying to enjoy the process. Normally in my life, Ariel, I'm always like, what's next? Well, I'm in the middle of doing something. This time, I'm not worried about what's next. I'm just enjoying the process.
When does it come out?
It'll be next summer or fall. I'm hoping kind of fall, even though that pushes the release date a little bit later. But I like the idea of horror movies coming out in October for Halloween.
Oh, yes, of course, of course. And if anyone follows you on social media, they'd know that you would be a fan of that genre. Even your dog, Larry, he kind of looks like a Halloween-like dog. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's no disrespect to him. He just kind of seems like a dog that would be in a Halloween, a scary movie, right?
I mean, he's named after the Wolfman, one of the original.
Oh, well, there you go. Cover.
So, yeah.
Okay. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is your first live interview since UFC 225. If that is in fact the case, why have you been out of the limelight for so long?
I've been busy. You know, and I lost. What's there to talk about, you know? I've been writing. Like I said, I'm on this movie now. I filmed another one in Toronto about a month ago. So it was just a matter of me kind of going through all the projects I had lined up that got offered to me while I was training for the last fight.
Did you realize that today is the 2-year anniversary of your debut?
No, I didn't know that.
Isn't that wild? 2 years.
That is wild. It feels like it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It's unbelievable how much has happened since then. And I'm wondering, when you look back on it all, is it with fondness? Are you happy you did all this? Are you happy you took this chance? Are you happy you stepped foot in there? Can you look back, you know, even though they both didn't go your way, can you look back with pride and with a silver lining?
Without a doubt, yeah. There's absolutely no shame in taking a chance in your life, and I took a big chance, you know. And I feel like even speaking about this now, like we are, I feel like there's finality to it, but I don't want anybody to jump to conclusions and start making headlines. I got to talk to Duke. I got to get back to training, and I plan on doing that as soon as I wrap on this movie. But, yeah, I look back at all of it. Actually, you know what? I did know it was the 2-year anniversary because my jiu-jitsu coach posted a picture on Instagram, and, it made me smile. So, yeah, I look back on all this stuff, and I was very fondly.
And so, okay, that was really interesting what you said. You're not done. You want to keep fighting.
I think so. Yeah, I'm not ruling it out, but I'm also not, throwing my name in a hat right away.
Okay, so you're leaving the door open?
Yes, door's open.
Is there a deadline as to when you'd like to decide, or you're just taking opportunities as they come?
I'm taking opportunities as they come, and if there's a deadline, it's probably before the end of the year, but like I said, you know, I've been talking to Duke, and, you know, he's just like, let me know when you're coming back, and we'll talk about what's in your future. And that's my plan, is to talk to him.
Have you talked to Dana White or the UFC about your future?
I've talked to UFC personnel about going out to Vegas to see the old, what is it, Performance Institute.
Yes.
I have not spoken to Dana in a couple months.
Okay, so if it's not in the UFC, is it UFC or bust for you? Or if an opportunity arises outside, would you be willing to do that?
I don't think it's UFC or bust, but I'm definitely in a weird position. You know what I mean? Like, whereas there's other places out there, but it's just like, would I go? Should I go? Deserves got nothing to do with it. But it's really just kind of like, I still look at it like everything. The world's my oyster, and you know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to kind of pick and choose. I'll be the first to admit, you know me, I'm brutally honest. Probably doesn't make a lot of sense for me to fight in UFC again, but we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Dana hasn't told you or anyone in the UFC that we're releasing you, we don't want you to fight for us. You haven't gotten any kind of word on what they want to do with you.
No, I got no idea. I mean, he said after the first fight that I probably shouldn't fight again, that I fought again. So,
right.
Yeah. Exactly. We'll see.
Have you watched the fight against Mike Jackson?
No, I haven't.
Will you ever watch it?
I'm not sure. I got no real reason as to why I haven't watched it. I just haven't watched it.
Do you remember anything about it? Like, do you remember what you think you could have done better? What you wish you would have done better? Do you have any thoughts on it all?
Yeah, I mean, I think I took the second round off, but I think I was clearing cobwebs out of my head, and you know, I think I kind of woke up like maybe 2 or 3 minutes into the second round. It's probably too late by then.
And what about what he was doing in the fight? He was criticized for goofing around. Did you feel disrespected by him?
No, I mean, when the guy's beating you up, I didn't feel disrespected. I was just fighting.
Did you enjoy fighting in Chicago?
Yeah, I loved it. It was great. Seriously, tremendous. Can't say enough about how much I love the city. I think that's pretty evident.
Yeah, it felt like you were more comfortable out there and not so much enjoying the moment, because I felt like in the debut you were really enjoying the moment, but it did seem like you had made improvements since the last fight. Do you recall thinking that about your performance as well?
For me to think back on it, yeah, I definitely think there was for sure improvements.
Okay. I remember when I spoke to you on the Wednesday before, and there was a whole hullabaloo made about that all-in event, and you said you weren't approached. In the end, were you ever approached about it?
No. I was never made like an offer to be there. They said, hey, if you want to come, you should come. And I was like, oh, well, okay.
What, like as a fan?
Right. No, I don't know. It definitely wasn't implied as a fan. But it was extremely vague, and it was an offer. It wasn't an offer.
So even after you said that, they never came back to you?
No.
Okay. Wow. I'm surprised by that, especially since it took place in your backyard. I'm assuming though you couldn't even have done it due to the movies.
Correct. Yeah. I've been super busy, and that was a shoot day anyway. So you know.
One of the big things that came out of when we talked before the fight was it seemed like the door was a little more open to return to wrestling. Could you tell us your feelings on that? Not talking about WWE, but just in general, doing something, Japan, whatever. Is that door even more open now after the fight?
No, because to me that's like an escape hatch, you know. I think I got Beastmaster on Netflix, you know, that's season 3, and we're crossing our fingers we get to move forward and do a season 4. And, you know, aside from all the stuff that I can talk to you about, there's, of course, all the secret stuff that I'm not allowed to talk about that I'm doing, too. So it's just, you know, it's not even a matter of not going to wrestling because I'm busy doing other stuff. There's just nothing that interests me in wrestling. So there's your headline for the clickbait sites out there.
No, I'm not looking for that. I think
well,
a lot
not
of
you.
No, I know.
Not you. I'm just saying the people who rely on people who just read headlines and don't read articles and misquote me all the time.
Has anyone offered you anything since the fights in June? Any of the international promotions? Any of the other ones?
No.
That blows my mind.
I haven't heard from it. I'm a hard guy to get a hold of, Ariel. It shouldn't blow your mind. You know that. I'm insulated by many levels of people that I trust. So if you really want to get a hold of me, you can, but it might be harder to get a hold of me than other people.
That's fair. And now what about the comic scene?
I always have irons in the fire in the comic scene. But nothing I can really talk about right now.
Damn. So the idea that CM Punk is sitting at home and just kind of, you know, licking his wounds or whatever the case may be not accurate at this juncture.
I mean, I wish it was accurate. that sounds fun. You know, that's the life everybody wants, right? At least you think you want that. You want to be so successful at something that you love that you generate enough income that, you know, you can just sit at home until you realize just sitting at home is really boring and you want to go out and do stuff. And then, you know, like I said, I'm fortunate enough to be a very busy guy just because maybe it's not particularly in the line of work that you want me in. Doesn't mean I'm sitting at home.
Are you enjoying it all? Like, do you like this lifestyle?
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, I bring my dog and my wife everywhere with me. So it's, you know, we're gypsies that found each other that get to hang out while we go do these wild projects together. It's fun.
Now, will you be traveling? It's not a foregone conclusion, but, you know, we're getting close to October. Cubs are hanging on ever so slightly. Will you be traveling to any of those games?
I hope to be kind of wrapped up with a lot of the stuff I need to do, because not only is, you know, October baseball very important on my calendar, but, you know, the start of the 2018-19 NHL season.
Yes.
So, you know, the Hawks, I think the Hawks' first home opener is on the 7th, I think. I think they start on the road in Ottawa. You never know where I'll be.
So these are the important things, like the movies, Beastmaster, all that stuff. It's all well and good, but this is the stuff you really revolve your life around.
Yeah, I try to schedule my interview around the Cubs doubleheader today, but it didn't, you know, didn't really work out.
Damn it. Okay, so I won't keep you much longer, I promise.
Yeah, I don't want Pearl to get mad at me.
No, Pearl, I think she's actually arriving any minute now, so I don't think she's actually in the bill. You're a huge fan. Is it because she's a Chicago gal, or is it just because you like her fighting style? What's the story there?
It's all that, and it's easy to lean on it because it's like, oh, look at that. She's from Chicago. She's Latina, and, you know, my wife's Puerto Rican. So
that's true.
It's just like, you know, we gotta support our own. That's how I feel about it.
Can I ask you a question, Punk, about Colby Covington? Do you appreciate – it's very clear what he's doing, and I know you kind of follow, but is there brilliance to what he is doing, or do you feel like this is cheap? Coming from your psychology, because I think that you come from the best place possible at analyzing this stuff, to me, this is wrestling 101, what he's doing. I try not to get too worked up about it all. How do you feel about what, you know, that line, not crossing it, so to speak, but getting ever so close to it and playing on political topics? I mean, this is stuff that even pro wrestling doesn't even touch. You know, they touched on you know, Desert Storm and things like that. They're not even touching this. Do you feel like this is too much for our sport, that he shouldn't go this far?
I think it's a very nuanced question that probably deserves a very nuanced answer, but my base answer is it's racist, and anything that has to do with racism, I can't even say I'm not comfortable with it. It's bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't watch him on your show, because when I don't like something, I don't watch it. Mm-hmm. There's a little hint for everybody out there. If you don't like a fighter, if you don't like a movie star, if you don't like, you don't like a writer, don't read his comic books, don't listen to somebody's music if you don't like it. I think him wearing the MAGA red hat that's the Ku Klux Klan hood in 2018, because people are too polite to stand up and say what they really want to say. And I think all of Trump's policies, his ideals, it's all racist. He supported a bunch of neo-Nazis in Charlottesville when he could have come out and said, no, I don't like Nazis, and he didn't do that. So this is a topic you can't be Switzerland on. You know, when you're neutral, you've made a choice. It's like, no comment is a comment. I can't, you know. Tyron's a friend of mine. Tyron's from Ferguson. There's been racial turmoil in Ferguson, you know, and it's almost the whole start of all of this stuff. So yeah, I get what Colby's doing, but, you know, I don't appreciate it, if that makes sense. Without being like mad at him, I'm not giving him the desired reaction he wants. I just ignore it, you know.
I appreciate that. What about your boy Tyron? I thought that was his best performance as champion and one of his best ever. Did you watch on Saturday, and if so, what'd you think?
I was in the middle of shooting. Luckily, though, our lunch was like at 11 p.m., so I got to watch.
Lunch?
Lunch, yeah. Yeah,
wow.
My day, yeah. We went until about 8 in the morning that day.
Oh,
it was a rough one. You know what, I'm all about positive mental attitude, right? So, like, I think the stories, and that's another thing about Colby's obviously preying on the lowest common denominator and, like, the negativity in the world. I'm like, I get that. But I don't think in 2018 you get to go, oh, I'm being a heel. It's like, no, that's corny and you're stupid. One of the positive things, I think, coming out of UFC, whichever number it was, I think was the sportsmanship between Darren Till and Tyron Woodley. I love Darren Till. I love when guys are that into themselves and they believe that strongly, because I feel anytime you step into a cage to fight another human being, like if you even have a hint of doubt, like you might be in a little bit of trouble. People might think I'm crazy. I walked into the cage both times and I had 100% confidence in myself. I think that's something that fighters need. Tyron getting his black belt. Tyron finishing a young stud with a Darce choke. Aljamain Sterling pulling off that insane, you know, knee bar and not getting a bonus off it. That's the negative part of that positive story. there's just always so much negativity that people prey on, and I suppose because that's the easy hook to get people to watch or to buy. But I just feel like there's so many positive things coming out of that night, and I would much rather focus on that. Jim Miller fighting his 30th UFC fight. Like, that's amazing. Like, let's focus on the positive.
I appreciate that. I think we need to do that, not just as far as the UFC is concerned, but everything in life, right? Not just our sports, but everything in life. So I appreciate you saying that. It's called Ultimate Beastmaster. It's out right now on Netflix. It started August 31st. The beauty, as Punk said earlier, the beauty of Netflix is you can watch everything in one sitting. 9 episodes, hosts from all over the country, US, UK, Australia, Brazil, Germany, France, Italy, Mexico, South Korea. And it is like, and that was the first thing I thought, so I'm happy that you say that it's compared to that, but I won't say the name. It is like some of those crazy obstacle course, American Gladiator-like shows from back in the day as well. So I appreciate it greatly, and I appreciate you coming on the show, Punk, here today. I know you're very busy, and I know everyone bothers you, so anytime we get a chance to talk, is always a treat for us, and thanks for being honest about the way things are. So by the end of the year, that's when you'll kind of have a better sense if you're going to keep on this journey or not, correct?
Yeah, I believe so, and I think by the end of the year, I'll probably have a better handle on my topsy-turvy life.
It's good. Topsy-turvy life is better than a boring life, so enjoy it while you can.
Correct.
Thanks so
correct.
Much for doing this. Good luck with the show. Continued success, and we'll talk to you very soon. I really appreciate it.
All right, spotlight Pearl for me. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
I will. There she is, or there he is, I should say. CM Punk, there she is. Pearl Gonzalez is coming up in a matter of moments, but CM Punk is not a she. He is a he. And he is coming at your TV screen whenever you want. Just go to Netflix. Go to netflix.com/Ultimate Beastmaster, and that's where you can see. You saw some of the footage right over there. It started, 10 days ago, but the beauty of Netflix is you don't really have to wait. It's not appointment viewing, so to speak. You don't have to wait for the new episodes. They're all out right now. I saw one as I enjoy my Body Armor sports drink. And it's very good. So is my Body Armor. This is my Pearl Gonzalez shirt. She's coming up. Look at that. Pearl Gonzalez, CM Punk's favorite fighter. She sent this to us. I did such a good job of folding it, and now I just ruined it. There's also a photo of her right over there. She'll be in studio in a matter of moments. So interesting stuff there from CM Punk. The door is still open. He is not done fighting. We'll see what happens. As far as his mixed martial arts career is concerned, and I cannot believe that no one has reached out to him about All In or all those places. That's crazy to me. That is crazy. Crazy. All right. One of the other big stories on Saturday in Dallas, Texas, the return of Diego Sanchez, and what a performance against Craig White. Wow. That was amazing. Turning back the clock, and it was so much fun to see both him and Jim Miller back to back. That was really great stuff. It's so great to have him back on the program. Let's say hello now to the nightmare himself, Diego Sanchez. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing excellent, man. How you doing, Ariel?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for the time, Diego, and congratulations on the win. It seemed like you were enjoying yourself out there, but it was almost like David versus the Goliath. He was like 20 pounds bigger than you in there, right?
Yeah, 22.5 pounds bigger. And that was getting on the scale right after the fight. They weigh us before, they weigh us after now, and after the fight, I was 173.5. Actually, I'm about 172 right now. I'm actually sitting here in the sauna at Jackson Wink's. Shout out to Fit Bomb Sauna for hooking us up with the best infrared sauna. You know, got to give my little shout out. But
yeah,
it was a David and Goliath, and that's a choice that I made. I don't have a 165 pound division. I'm stuck in between these two, and at my age, you know, the weight cut is gonna take a toll. 55 was just too much for me. I realized that it drained my speed, and not only my physical speed, but my mental speed, and most importantly, my reactional speed. So, you know, yeah, it's David and Goliath for me now, and I'm gonna just do my best to put on some weight after this fight.
Now, Diego, the last time we had someone do an interview from a sauna, their phone overheated. Are you sure that's okay to be doing an interview from the sauna,
yeah,
to be on the phone?
It's good. It ain't going to overheat. my iPhone 8 is good to go. It's not too hot. I just cranked the heat on about 2 minutes ago. It's not too hot in here. It ain't gonna die out.
Okay, I appreciate it. I don't want you to have your phone explode on us or anything like that. Did you?
Yeah, no. I have a Bluetooth headphone and Bluetooth headphones and the phone is like in the coolest part of the sauna, so no worries. It ain't gonna happen.
Diego, were you fighting for your career on Saturday night?
No, Ariel. I was fighting for me. I was fighting for just the belief that I have in my heart. You know that God put in me to believe in myself. And yeah, you know, I think every fight I'm fighting for my career. Every fight is your most important fight. But for me, I was backed into a corner in 2017. I had the devastating loss to Ally Aquinta, you know, the whole Lionheart experience, you know, where you know, I got caught and I got hurt, and that's one of those things where I had to reevaluate 155. And during my reevaluation of 155, I went back and I watched all my fights at 55, and I watched my fight at UFC 107 with BJ Penn. And I realized that in that fight, I latched on to all the emotions that I had back then. I really wanted to tie into the experience of fighting in a UFC World Championship fight, the biggest fight of any fighter's career, the biggest stage. And at 27 years old, I realized, man, I look back on fight week and how I was water loading and how I got down to about 167 and I had to pull the rest of the weight off. But even at 27, it dramatically affected my reactionary speed. And so going back now at 36, looking back, I'm like, no, Diego, you can't do this no more. You can't fight like that. If you're going to fight, you're going to fight healthy. You're going to fight strong. That Thursday night, we're not going to be killing ourselves making weight. We're going to be rested. We're going to get a good night's rest on Thursday, and we're going to wake up, and we're going to go make weight easily, and we're going to fight with the focus being not on the fight, not on the weight cut, but the focus being on the fight 100% all week long. And my focus was not on the fight in any of those fights at 155. My focus was on making weight.
Did things change, Diego, when he kissed you on the nose? Did that light a fire under you? Did that change anything mentally for you?
Absolutely not. You know, I stated myself in the interviews, the media scrum after the fight. I let people know that he did me a favor because I've been going through a lot of changes in these last 7-8 months, and one of those changes was just finding my own fight identity and knowing who I am and how I have to fight. And I'm not going out there to play the cat and mouse game with little 4 ounce gloves. It's foolish. It's foolish. Yeah. Everybody wants those big highlight knockouts, and everybody wants to get the knockout of the night and be trending on Instagram and Twitter. But you know what? That is how you get caught. You get caught with one shot you didn't see. And you're down. You're out, man. You're knocked out. And I seen it in Ellenberger's last fight too. He went out there. He was playing that cat and mouse. Okay, you kick my leg. Okay, let's move around a little bit. Let's see who's quicker. Let's kind of play that little game. Let's feel each other out. Let's warm up a little bit and let's get it going. But that's not Diego Sanchez. And I realized that. I made the changes in my training camp, and one of the changes was having Mike Perry, in my opinion, who is the most raw guy in all of mixed martial arts. He's a true fighter. You know, he's not here to be a sportsman. And having him around, having his energy around, it rubbed off. And I said, you know what, Diego, that's who the freaking man here is, man. And in the past, I've gotten, you know, a little bit into the martial artist mindset of, okay, respect and honor and let's go out there and we'll live by the sword, we'll die by the sword. But no, you know, what's in your mind's eye needs to be in your mind's eye. if you have it in your mind, God, of, okay, let's shake hands, let's be friends. No, I'm not trying to go out there and say, oh, let's be the most respectful we can be. I'm not trying to respect a man that is coming to try to knock my brain out. Give me mental damage. Break my leg, like Martin Held was trying to break my leg, hurt my leg. No. Why am I going to go out there and try to beat Francis and shake their hands before a fight? I changed that. And so when he kissed me, he did me a favor. I was no longer the disrespectful. He was the disrespectful. And so he did me a favor. I didn't want to shake his hand anyway. And he gave me the out. So, you know, I took it as a blessing in disguise. And, you know, from there, the rest is history. He ended up having to kiss my ass, literally.
Diego, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned Mike Perry because, as you know, there's been a lot of drama at the gym with Mike and Donald Cerrone leaving, and you've, you know, been vocal about Mike and about the team. Did you feel like you needed to put on a good performance to sort of let everyone know that Jackson Wink is still here to stay? There's still a force in this sport?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, my loyalties were to the Jackson Wink team. And, you know, I heard Cowboy say on the interview, like how he was the original guy and the last one standing that I had left. I left for not even 2 years, maybe 2 years at top. I left for 2 years, but when I left, I had a meeting with Greg in his office. We talked about the reasons why I was leaving. It was a personal discussion, and it stayed there in that office. I gave him a hug when I left. I told him I love him. He gave me a hug back, said he loved me too. He said, this is always your house and you're always welcome here. And you know what? When I hit rock bottom after UFC 107, and after I lost it all, I hit the real rock bottom. I lost every single penny that I earned. And after that, like, I came back. God brought me back home to Jackson Wink. Jackson Wink is my home. And Mike Winklejohn is my head striking coach. That's it. That guy lost the eye to the game. That guy lost the testicle to the game. That guy is a freaking warrior savage who's been in there. He's faced the cuts. He's faced the wars. He's been knocked out. He knows what it's like. He's my leader. He's my leader. Him and Greg Jackson too. You know Greg Jackson? You know, from day one. You know, he knows how my mind operates, how I work, and to have him. But third, why I was so upset is because he came out and made a lies up about my close personal friend that's my wrestling coach, and Chad is not just a wrestling coach, he's a mixed martial arts coach, and let's correct that right now. He's one of the best in the world, and he's amazing at what he does. And me and Chad, we worked every day, and we had a reputation to uphold. We had a lot on the line, and we went out there, and I didn't hold back. And the victory, my hand was raised in a dominant fashion. I think the rounds should have been 10-8 rounds all the way through.
Yeah, I was actually watching it with some people on Saturday, and they agreed with you as well. Considering all the drama, and considering you've fought in that weight class before, would you fight Donald Cerrone over all of this, Diego?
Well, you know what, Ariel, I'll fight whoever Greg Jackson, Mike Winklejohn, and Chad Smith, my advisory team. I'm gonna talk to Sean Shelby. Sean Shelby's gonna give me the list of guys that are available, and it's not my decision to make because, you know what, we're fighters. We are gonna have ego. We are gonna have pride. And so this decision is made strategically on my success, systematically, what is going to be my best road to success? Because I am, you know, especially when I was back in the corner in 2017, you know, I had the loss to Al, and then I had the loss to Matt, which was even harder for me because I felt that, you know, it was a situation, an MMA exchange of techniques that no one had ever seen before. No one had ever seen anybody get elbowed while kicking out of basically like a single leg when the guy has your leg. No one had ever seen anybody get elbowed in the back of the head from that position. usually you're too far away. The guy can't even reach you. And, you know, when you're kicking out, you turn away. Your head is turned away from your opponent. Maybe the timing of it, I turned right at the wrong time. He threw the elbow right at the right time. You know what? I'm not going to take that victory away from Matt Brown. But I do feel that the referee, he didn't never see anything like that before. So for him, his reputation is on the line. And he felt like, I don't want to be the guy that looks like I don't know what I'm not doing in there. And then the same goes for Paul Felder and John Anik. The TV went out when I got hit. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even really get a feed either. It was so fast. It was so quick. Everybody just kind of went with it. Like, okay, it's Matt Brown's retirement fight. Let's, we're gonna just shush on this. I could have went to the commission. I could have got my lawyer. I could have fought the decision. But at the end of the day, Diego Sanchez is a Burke street warrior. My fighting experience came from the streets before it was ever in a cage or in a mat. And so I looked at it like this. I said, okay, me versus Matt Brown, middle of the desert, last drip of water. Shit, man, he would have got me with that KO elbow. He would have got me. And so I think I know how, if someone ever catches that liver kick again, I know how to react correctly because I had to learn the freaking hard way. But here I am, and I'll stop babbling and rambling and let you get some questions off.
No, it's okay. We love to talk to you, Diego. And so what would you say is the state of the team right now? Does it feel like there's a lot of drama? Do things, you know, because Donald was such a, you know, he was such a fixture for so many years, and your coaches are involved, and it just feels like there's a lot. As one of the leaders of the team, how would you describe it?
You know, right now is a rejuvenation. The victory that the example that I put as a captain for this team out there was, don't back down, don't take a step back, let's believe in ourselves, let's work hard, let's make the sacrifices. Let's go out there and let's take this victory from our opponent's will. Let's stop his will from coming to fruition against our will, and let's go take our will out on him. And for me, my will was to fracture an orbital bone, break the skull, cut the face. I mean, killer mindset, like Mike Perry, savage, straight killer mindset. And that's where my mind has evolved to, Ariel, in the fight with Matt Brown, where I got hit on the back of the head. You know, am I going to try to hit someone in the back of the head? No. But if I can punch to behind the ear, yeah. No, dude, that's a legal spot. I'm going to hit there. If my elbow lands right there behind the ear, it's a legal shot. Justin Poirier, it got showed to Justin Poirier when Conor hit him right there. Even before the fight, they were in the back. Conor's talking to the ref. He's like, okay, so is this right here? Is this a legal shot? He said, yes. Conor went out there. He hit him right there in that spot. And so now, through my losses, I'm coming in with a killer mindset. I'm coming to kill, steal, and destroy my opponent's will and his destiny. Because it's my destiny or his destiny, and I believe in the destiny that the good Lord gave me, and that's to be the UFC champion. And the whole world could doubt me. They could come against me and say, oh, no, this, that, brain dead, oh, da-da-da-da, CTE, bullshit talk. That's not me. I'm like the Iceman. I'm like Iceman Wim Hof. Like, after I get out of this sauna, I'm hopping into that ice bath. Like, I'm doing my breathing techniques. I'm on my yoga. I'm on my meditation. I'm on my prayer, you know, to the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ who saved me. You know, I'm coming strong, Ariel. And I texted Dana White. I said, Dana, thank you for not giving up on me after 2017. I know that was a year that could have broken any other fighter. But 22 pounds over, you know, I was 22 pounds outweighed in the fight with Craig. And I told him, I said, it's not the size of the dog, it's the fight in the dog, the size of the fight in the dog. And I took that 170 pounds. Like, I'm fighting at my walk-around weight. I'm going in there, I fought at my walk-around weight. And you know what? David played the giant. I didn't get the finish, I got to take my hat off to Craig White. He did a great job on his conditioning. He did a great job on his conditioning because most men that cut 25 plus pounds, they fade. They fade when they're in there with the nightmare. They fade. It's just, it's part of it. It's science. It's the fatigue of the hormonal endocrine system. And this is all stuff that, why am I still around, Ariel? Why am I still fighting when no one else has fought as long or as consistent as me? It's because, man, I'm telling you, man, God has restored my youth like an eagle, and I have the endurance to run his race and not grow weary. I'm going to keep on fighting with every ounce.
Oh, no. Did it actually overheat? Please don't tell me you did. Oh, no. I had one more question. Please call him back. I had one more question for El Corazon de Leon. I was worried that the phone would overheat. Second time. First time was Mike Perry. Two birds of a feather. They're like the same guy. They love each other. They support each other. New teammates. There is only one Diego Sanchez. He is inimitable. He is the real deal. He is the genuine article. He is someone who has been around this sport for, wow, it feels like forever, since 2002. The very first winner of The Ultimate Fighter, because he fought earlier in the evening against Kenny Florin. He won via TKO. And I guess it's somewhat fitting if the interview actually does end this way, if his phone isn't working, because I wanted to ask him about Mickey Gall calling him out and if he was interested. That was my last question. Oh, you gotta love him. What a win. Oh my God. His phone is not picking up. I called it. You can't do interviews from a sauna. Your phone will overheat. Oh, he just said call me back. Okay. I just have one more question for him. We're calling you, Diego.
Sorry.
Diego, are you there?
It wasn't.
Did it overheat? Oh, no. Did it actually overheat? What happened? Diego. I've been in the sauna before, believe it or not. The phone gets really hot. It actually gets super hot. When you're doing a Skype interview or a Skype chat or whatever with your phone inside a sauna, it gets even hotter. So it was... willing to let it slide for this one occasion, but it appears as though my worst fears... By the way, can anyone let me know, for some reason, when I get a text or a phone call, it doesn't show up. Like, I have to actually open my phone to see it. I no longer get the notification. It's making my life... Oh, his Bluetooth died. Oh, maybe it wasn't the phone. Let's call him back very quickly. Call me back ASAP, he says. Okay. The hardworking staff in the back is efforting. Darn Bluetooth. I don't like Bluetooth. I always feel like I'm getting like brain cancer or something whenever I use those AirPods. But the other problem is with the iPhone X and I need like a battery case. You can't have like the plug-in because I guess the battery is using this little... Why did Apple have to do that? It really annoys me. Why do they have to put in this new thing here? Why can't they just keep it simple? He says he's waiting. Should I just call him right now? Oh. The great Danny Rubenstein is telling me that I have a do not disturb on. Oh my God. It was on. How did he know? Oh my God, my life has been completely changed. Danny Rubenstein of Ruby Sports and Entertainment just texted me. This proves that doing a show live actually helps. Wait, someone text me right now. Anyone. If anyone's listening. Wait, Diego's, I think he's losing his patience because he's saying I'm waiting. Oh my God, can someone text? This is an unbelievable development in my life. Development. I had the do not disturb on this whole time. Is his phone turned off? Diego, are you there?
Yeah, dude. So sorry, bro. It wasn't the phone being overheated.
Okay. I'm happy.
But, I know we're on a short time, Ariel. So I'm not gonna ramble. You know, I'm not gonna ramble. Just let's get this done.
I just want to ask you one more question, then I'll let you go. Mickey Gall 2 weeks ago says he wants to fight you. Says the UFC is interested. Are you interested?
You know what? I am interested. I like the matchup. Okay. I like Mickey Gall. But like I said before, you know, the decision is not mine to make.
Yes.
Jackson, Wink, and Coach Smith, they're going to go over the list of opponents, and they're going to make the decision for me.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. Diego, congratulations. Very happy to see you back on track. What a great moment it was. What a great scene it was in Dallas, Texas this past weekend. Always great to catch up with you. Continued success, Diego. We'll talk to you very soon. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, thank you. So good to talk to you too, man. And love the show. Love all your success, man. And blessings your way too, Ariel. Have a good day, bro.
Same to you and your family. There he is. El Corazon de Leon. Diego Sanchez stopping by. All right. That does it for our phone/Skype guests today. But without further ado, let us say hello to CM Punk's favorite fighter, the one and only Pearl Gonzalez is here. There she is. How are you, Pearl? Please welcome. My hands are a little sweaty, so please do not judge me based on that. But it's a little hot in here, Pearl. As you can tell. And how about this?
OMG, you
got
it.
How about this shirt, Pearl? Look at that.
That's so exciting.
See it? Let me see if I can move this right. There it is. Look at that.
That's beautiful.
I appreciate you sending this to us. And also we have right over, you see it right over there?
Ah, that's
awesome.
See the picture? Yes.
There it is.
That's amazing.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
It's great. Please get a little closer to the microphone. Right. Bring it up to your mouth there so we can hear you loud and clear. How's that? Does that work for you?
That works. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you just fine. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for coming. Thank you for reaching out. Why are you in New York?
I am here visiting my cousin. My cousin lives in Brooklyn.
Okay. Which part, can I ask? I used to live there.
I don't know. Park Avenue and Broadway.
fair enough. That's okay. That's close enough.
Is where she lives, and I'm really close to her. A lot of my social media people know who she is. She is very involved with Team Gonzalez and a big part of my success.
I thought you were going to say I came to New York to do your show. That was the answer that I was looking for.
But I'm sorry.
It would have been so easy to just say
that's
that.
That's true. That's true.
But you're here to enjoy life. Just had a big win.
Yes.
Life is good.
Yeah.
Life is very good.
I was in New Jersey this weekend for an Arjar and Chai Muay Thai seminar, so I was there all weekend training. Today I'm here with you.
Yes.
And I was so excited. I'm so excited to be here. This is like a dream come true for me.
Great. And by the way, I don't know if you heard earlier, but CM Punk, are you familiar with CM Punk?
Yes.
He is a gigantic fan of yours.
Are you serious?
He kept saying that he wanted to cut short the interview so that we can get to your interview.
Oh,
he was
my
talking
God.
You
no
up
way.
Big time. Yes. Chicago
CM
connection.
Punk.
Yes. You're both
Hit
from Chicago.
Me up. I want to send you a shirt. I need to send you some Pearl swag.
There you go. He's been text. I'll show you the text out.
Oh,
he's like,
gosh.
get to Pearl. I don't care about this guest. Get to Pearl. All day he's been texting me. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Have you ever met him before?
I have not. I'm a big fan of his. I loved watching like his documentaries. I loved how he's running through Chicago. You know, I know he's from is he from Chicago or the Midwest?
He is from Chicago, but
he lives
I think
in Milwaukee
burbs.
Right now.
Well,
oh,
he trains in Milwaukee, but he does still live in Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man, it's amazing. I would love to collab with you, CM Punk. Like,
okay, wow.
Do something for our city. I would love to.
Okay.
Hit me up.
This is great. Congratulations on your win recently. Congratulations on all your success. 3-0 since leaving the UFC. 2-0 since moving up to flyweight.
Yes.
What's been the difference?
I think it's my mindset. My training has changed completely. I'm full-time with 10th Planet San Diego. I have amazing training partners, amazing coaches, and I'm just really living the life. I am at the gym from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. I sleep in my car in between training sessions. I'm there all day long. I live in California alone. This is my life. And so I think that my mindset, I had to go back to the drawing board, especially with the UFC being released from them. That was a pretty dark place in my life. I wasn't sure if I was ready, you know, willing to do this sport anymore. And it took me some time to figure it out. And I went back home and just, you know, really mentally put myself in a position where I had to give myself 100% opportunity at doing this and achieving the greatness that I know I'm capable of. And so ever since December, I went to Thailand for a month and I trained out there. And it's just been a life changer for me.
Did you feel like you got into the UFC too soon in hindsight?
I don't think so. I think that I just had the wrong mindset.
Okay.
When I was in the UFC, I never was confident enough to feel like I truly belonged there. Instead of going in there wanting to dominate, and it all happened for a reason. You know, I had the experiences. I had, you know, those fights. I had terrible performances. For me as an athlete, I needed those so that I know where never to allow myself to go mentally. I made some changes in the camp, in the training, and it's just been amazing. It's been blessings, my biggest blessing probably today.
Why did you feel like you didn't belong?
I just wasn't confident. I always felt like UFC was just a higher tier than me, another level. And so when I got to the UFC, I didn't change my mindset and how I identified myself, where I was at that level. It was always, the dream was to get there, not to stay there, to dominate there, to be there and own being there. And I think that was the problem, is I never changed my identity of myself once I got to that next level.
Were you more nervous in the fights? Were you doubting yourself? Were you not enjoying fight week? Was it just a horrible experience overall?
It wasn't a horrible experience. It was amazing. It was a dream come true. Being in front of the crowd, I love being in front of cameras. I love being in the lights. I loved all of that. It was, the cuts were hard. I was still trying to figure out my weight cuts. So those were really intense for me. I had probably the worst weight cuts in the UFC.
Wow.
And then the performance, I think it was not owning who I was in those moments, in that cage. And really today, I live for that. I live for those 15 minutes, the intense emotions that I go through. I live for that. So I didn't own that while I was there.
And we don't obviously have to harp on this, but now knowing this, knowing what you're telling me, and knowing what you went through in Buffalo, that must have been horrendous.
It was.
Right? 24 hours before the fight?
Yes.
Well, you're not, you don't even feel comfortable. You don't even feel like you belong.
Yes.
You have no confidence. And now they're screwing with you?
Yeah.
That must have been, I mean, like, you must have been thinking, like, this is my worst nightmare.
I was really shocked, and I was like, okay, I just got to make the best out of this situation and try to keep my composure. I think my whole life I've dreamed of being a superstar, and it came in all the wrong ways in that night. And so I think I was definitely embarrassed, but I had to make the best of the situation and get through the fight.
There was a press conference with John Jones and you after the weigh-ins. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Like, John Jones's first kind of revealed to the press after the UFC 200 debacle, and you haven't even fought in the UFC yet. You're now supposed to be going back to the hotel and rehydrating and eating and things like that, and you have to go meet the press to talk about personal things.
Right.
I can't imagine what's going on in your mind.
I was just trying to keep my composure. And
you did a great job.
Thank you.
You really hit it well. Like, it looked like you were like a seasoned vet throughout the whole thing, but I think what the New York Commission did to you was unfair.
It was a tough situation. I think that they did the best that they could with what they thought they had. They were the boxing rules for here, and it was a good experience overall for me.
So when you left the UFC, when they released you, what did they say to you? Because it's not often that after two fights, you know, the performance, you lost the fights, but they weren't like total stinkers. It didn't look like you didn't belong. There have been worse performances in the UFC. Why did they release you? What did they say to you?
They just said that they thought I needed more experience.
Okay.
And after the last performance, I knew that that was my worst performance yet, and I was already kind of expecting to hear that from them. And they just told me to go get some more experience, and that they didn't want to release me, but they thought I needed more work. And I agreed with it. And, you know, I just, again, I know that those performances were not who I am as a fighter. I didn't really get to showcase who I am. I was caught up in the nerves, and so I had to go back to the drawing board.
Did you consider retiring?
I did. I was ready to be done with the sport.
Really?
Yeah.
How close were you?
I was talking about it. I was like, you know, I don't think I'm cut out for this. Maybe I'm not cut out for the level that I know that I've always dreamed of. And my family and my teammates were like, just give it some time, just take some time off. And I did. I took about a month and a half off, and I kind of secluded myself from everyone, read about 5 books, and really just kind of went inward and tuned into myself, where I decided I'm just going to give it one last shot, and I'm going to give this my all.
And so how do you go from feeling, okay, I'm going to retire, I'm not cut out for this? Like, is there a turning point? Is there a moment? Do you remember? Did you have an epiphany? Did someone talk to you? How do you switch? Especially when you said you had confidence issues.
I went to Thailand, and I was in Thailand, and I met this amazing man, Ajarn Chai, who's been teaching here Muay Thai for 50 years now.
Wow.
So he's well-known in the MMA community, in the martial arts community. He brought Muay Thai here. And I went to one of his camps. I did not know who he was. I wanted to go to Thailand to train. So I found this camp. It was a 3-week-long camp. And he had already watched video on me. He knew I had just been released. He knew who I was. And I walked into his house, and I met him. And he was very sweet to me. And he told me, after 10 minutes of meeting me, is, Pearl, if you work hard every day, you're going to be world champion. And I looked at him, and I was like, he's like, you good. You have to work hard. Work hard, Pearl. Gonzalez. And I'm like, oh, I don't even know this man, but I respect him so much. And you know, you feel people's energy, like legends, right, like this. And it just was like, oh my God, I can be a world champion. Like, if this man believes this in me, then I can try. And so I, every day he taught me how to work hard and pushed me through the ringer in Thailand. And I just loved it. And I came home, and he taught me how to pray. He taught me the respect and the honor of being in this sport. And that really went a long way for me. It changed my life. It really did. And I went home, and I kept everything that he taught me, and I just continued on with it.
Did you reach out to Invicta, or did they reach out to you?
I think it was a mutual thing. I think we reached out, but they were also, and Shannon had been telling me for years, I want you to come fight for me. And I, at that time, was like, I don't know. I was focused on the UFC.
Yeah.
So it was like a mutual thing. She was really excited when we contacted her.
What's it like going, you know, you fight in Las Vegas, big arena, T-Mobile, you fought sold out crowd in Buffalo, and now you're fighting in front of smaller venues. What was that like for you? And backstage is different, right? And
yes,
just the whole fight week is different.
Yes.
What was it like mentally?
It was a little easier.
I think.
I think even just being around so many women athletes, that's really cool. You get to see the different mindsets, what they're going through, and it kind of brings it all together. Like, this is just how it is. It's not just me. I'm not the only one that's going through these emotions and these thoughts. And then the smaller crowds, I love it. I love it. The cage is smaller. It feels a little more like what I was used to before the UFC. And then my family's pretty close, so I actually end up having big crowds right now with Invicta, and I'm loving that I get to perform in front of my family.
You had one fight at 115 and then the last two at 125.
Yes.
Why'd you move up?
Shannon asked me the night of my 115 fight if I wanted to fight in 4 weeks on her next card in Kansas City, and I was like, I'll take a fight at 125. I didn't want to do another weight cut at 115. And so she said, okay. And so she found me an opponent at 125. I ended up really enjoying the weight cut there, and I felt really good. And I also know that this belt is vacant, and I'm here. I'm coming to take it.
So you're staying at 125?
Yes, for this title.
No. Well, eventually you're going to go back down?
I think so. I think that I am a very light 125er. I walk around about 132.
Oh, wow.
So I'm pretty light, and I can definitely make 115 today.
Okay. So does that mean your next fight is for the belt?
I hope so.
Okay.
We'll see. Shannon.
Have they told you that?
No, but I do have to apologize to Shannon for swearing on my post-fight interviews.
Oh.
I feel really bad about
Really?
I said the F word and the S word. And
was she mad about that?
No, but I just want to say I'm sorry, Shannon.
Okay. But it's not on broadcast TV, so it's not like you're going to get fined or anything like that.
Right.
But still, you feel bad.
I do.
Okay.
I try very hard to be an example to, you know, our youth and to be professional in this sport. But I was just so overwhelmed with emotion that, you know, it came out.
That interview was played everywhere. You were very emotional afterwards, as you just said, because of the passing of your father.
Yes.
When did he pass? And I'm very sorry about that.
Thank you.
I know how much your family means to you and how close you are to them. When did he pass away?
He passed away May 20th was the day that I laid him to rest. And so it was a couple weeks after my fight in May.
Okay. And do you mind me asking how he passed away?
Yeah, absolutely. He had an asthma attack that resulted, and he was at work. He was by himself. He had an asthma attack. When the fire department came, he was already unconscious, and then he went into cardiac arrest. They resuscitated him seven times. I was actually with him the day this happened. He had dropped me off at the airport. I went to stay, and I stood a little longer to spend time with him. It was his birthday 3 days before this happened, and something had told I just felt something where I wanted to really spend some time with him. I needed to. I didn't know if I'd get another birthday with him.
Wow.
And so, he ended up dropping me off at the airport. We had an amazing conversation that day. That night I got home, my sister called me and said that he was in the hospital. He had this, you know, this incident. And I was like, do I need to come home? We weren't sure how serious it was. And she was like, I think you should come home. So I jumped on a flight right back home the next day.
How does an asthma attack lead to that? Is that common?
I don't think so. I think he just couldn't breathe. They said that they had got to the scene. He had his asthma inhaler in his hand, and he was unconscious from not having any air.
Wow.
And so with that, I guess that resulted in cardiac arrest. Okay. And then that's when, you know, they had to resuscitate him.
How old was he?
He had just turned 53.
Oh, wow. Was he healthy otherwise?
He was pretty healthy. Yes. Okay. Yes.
And the shock. I mean, you did not expect this.
No.
How did you handle it?
I remember being on the flight. I remember anxiety, crying. I was really upset. And then I just sat there, and I'm so grateful for Thailand, because Thailand, again, was very spiritually touching for me, where I learned there that in order to achieve this greatness and to feel this success, the success that I want to feel, the happiness I want, I knew I'd have to suffer. And I think that in Thailand, I kind of accepted that I might lose some family. I'm going to suffer in life. And so, on my plane ride home, I was pretty upset. And then I just remember putting my head down and saying, like, going back to Thailand and knowing suffering is a part of life. Whatever happens, I'm going to be strong for him, and I'm going to get through this. And so I remember kind of just putting on my fight face. My sister was waiting for me when she picked me up from the airport, and I just knew I had to be strong. He didn't have a wife. My other sisters are younger than me, so I knew that I was going to be the one making the decisions and had to be the strong one for the family. And so I just put my fight face on and then headed to the hospital.
His wife was your mom?
He was never married.
Never married. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So who's your mom?
My mom. What do you mean? My mom is around. They're actually really good friends. They were really good friends.
Okay.
So they stood like friends. But yes, he had.
Oh, they were not married.
No, they were not married. They were not together.
Oh, okay, I understand. But they don't live. Obviously, didn't live together.
No.
But they stayed in touch.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, they're good friends.
And so, is your mom still around?
Yeah, she is.
Okay. So was she? Was she there?
She did. She came in the next day. I was fortunate. My family did come around. We were in the hospital. I was in the hospital with him for a week. He was on the breathing thing.
Right.
I can't think of the name of it. But I wasn't sure how the damage, the severity of him being unconscious for so long. He was still moving, and I still had hope when I first got there. When I got there, there was no doubt in my mind that he was not going to make it through. Like, he was going to get through this. I was like, you're going to be strong, and if you're not, I'm going to be strong for you. I'm like yelling at him. And so I spent the whole week there. I didn't leave the hospital. And then finally, you know, I told him, I was like, Dad, just give me a sign. You know, if you want to live, I'll do anything possible. I'll do anything in my power to make sure that you get taken care of. If you're ready to go, I won't be selfish. I'll let you go. Cause I was not ready to let him go at first. So they did this test on him where they checked his blood flow to his brain. And that was what the doctor told me. He said, if there's no blood flow, he's brain dead, and I'm going to pronounce him dead. And I begged this doctor, please don't do this test. I wasn't ready for it. So I went down and spent some time. I prayed really hard, and the test came back. He did have some blood flows, which was a win for me that day. But the next day, his family had all he had saw all of his family, and immediately after he saw his mom and his sisters, like, his health just went completely down. And I was like, that's him telling me he's ready. And so I had to honor him and let him go.
What was this fight camp like for you?
It was an intense one. It was an emotional roller coaster for me. So I went through that week, the hospital week. He passes. Now I have to put together his funeral. So that's the following week, is me getting his funeral and arrangements and everything together. The following week after that, I have to go through all of his belongings and personal things and get rid of his stuff. So, and my sisters just were unable to help. We're unable, so I had to get through this by myself. So I got through all of his belongings. The day that I was done getting through his belongings, I was already booking. I booked a flight the next day. I had a photo shoot to do. And so I flew out the next day and I immediately just dove into training. It was the only place that I could wouldn't feel the pain. So now I'm obsessing in the training. And it was hard. As soon as I get to my car, I would just cry. I still have moments where, like, even today, I'm like, oh man, I gotta call my dad and tell him about Ariel Helwani. And it's like, oh, you know, I have those times where I still want to call him and he's not there. So it's tough. I think getting through this fight camp was really important for me because of how much energy I put into the training, and that's how I dealt with my dad passing. But after that fight, I felt a huge sense of relief, and I also told my dad that I was going to allow him, I was going to let him rest now. It was heavy. It was hard to carry the passing and the weight of that into my fight and to fight. So now I have to change my focus, and I need to focus on healing myself and taking care of myself.
Okay. Did he usually go to your fights?
He did. He would come to my training sessions until I moved to California. He would, till 24, he'd come after work and sit there and watch me train. He's the one that put me in fighting at 11 years old. He raised me as a single parent. So him and I were very, very close. He was my biggest fan. When I started getting in trouble, he begged me to go back to training. He would always beg me. And so this is how I'm going to honor him, is through the sport. This is my one way I feel I'm still connected to him is through me training and, you know, living on through this.
When you were younger and getting involved with the wrong crowd, he's the one that brought you to the gym, right?
Yes.
And to straighten you out.
Yes, he did. And he would, and then, so at first I did not like training. Of course, there's people telling me what to do. I got to do pushups and stuff. So I was like, I don't want to go. And he's like, you're going. He forced me to go. And then like a couple months later, my punishment would be if I got like a bad grade, I couldn't go train. And I would scream and cry and beg him to let me go. And he'd be like, no, you have to get your grades up. So that was the way he punished me, was not letting me go to training sometimes.
So what did your dad think when you were married and you went to jail for 2 weeks because you were sort of, I
crazy.
Guess, yeah. what is it called? Like complicit? Like you were just there, but you didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
I can't think of the word, but yes.
Your ex-husband was robbing people and you were there and you got caught as well, right? What did he say to you about that?
I called him and I was crying. I was like, Dad. I called him the collect call, and my dad spent most of his teenage years in jail. Like we're from the hood. He knows, like, he didn't think I would do that, but it's not like it's abnormal for someone to be in jail in my neighborhood and my family.
Okay.
So he was like, what? And I was like, I'm in jail, and like crying, get me out. And I didn't realize the severity of my charges. It was a class X felony at first. They didn't have a bond. And then the bond was $200,000 and you have to pay 10% of that. So $20,000 you have to pay to get me out of jail. Wow. And he's like, I don't know where I'm going to get this money from. You know, he doesn't have $20,000 sitting around. And so I called him every single day, all day long. Dad, please. I was just crying my eyes out. Get me out. And so I think he put the house up. He did something where he managed to get the money. After like 2 weeks, he finally was able to come up with it. Plus he had to pay for my lawyer. I had a $10,000 lawyer that I needed for this. And so he was extremely upset, but my dad also did as he always did ever since I was young. He's like, you're paying me back every single penny. And he like would write down how much I owed him to the cent, and I would have to pay him back. And so I had to pay him back for
Did you pay
that.
Him back in full?
Yeah, I had to. Yes.
Wow. When did you finally pay up in full?
It took me probably like 6 years total, because I was just constantly making payments. But yeah, it took me some time. He was able to get some of that money back with the bond after the case was over. So it wasn't like I had to pay the full $30,000 to him, but I think I ended up owing him like $15,000, and I paid that off over the course of the years.
The one thing about that story that I don't understand is, why didn't you tell your ex-husband to stop? Because
I did. I was like, you're so stupid. But
you were there.
Yeah, but I didn't stop.
Well, so why did you leave?
I don't know why. I was like, this guy's so stupid, but like, I'm a loyal person.
You're loyal,
like, I guess I have to stay here and deal with this, because, you know, I had a job and I was very responsible, but it was just, I don't know why.
Do you know where that guy is?
I do not. Okay. I have no clue where that guy is.
Did he get more time?
I'm sure. I think after that, he didn't, he got out of that one.
Okay.
But then he ended up going to jail for like stealing urns from cemeteries or something.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
That dude is...
That's creepy.
He's, he's garbage.
How long were you together for?
We were together. I was 18, and then I divorced him at 21. So, like, 18 to 20, because he was in jail for the last year.
Oh, man. Earns.
Yeah.
That's creepy. That's Jeez Louise.
That's definitely.
What were the women like in jail?
They were, like, they were, gosh, there were so many different characters. Okay, so there was a lot of drug addicts, a lot of, like, heroin addicts that were withdrawing, coming off the drugs. And so there were a lot of hookers. There were two hookers having sex in the one cell.
What?
It wasn't, I was like, what is going
on? Oh my Lord.
I was really crying that night. Like, I was like, please get me out of
the same cell as you?
No, they were in, they were in the next cell, but like, I didn't have a sweater and it was like, it's like a silver, like a metal bed with no pillow, and it's just like a platform, and that's where you sleep. And I just remember like shivering, and they're having sex, and I'm like, why am I here? Oh my God. Lord. It was like the worst thing ever. And then like, there were a lot of women that were like, the withdrawing that were puking near me. There was one lady that was like shaking on me, and she's got like drool and stuff coming out of her mouth. And I was like, ah, get me out of this place.
For 2 weeks, right?
Yes. I just cried. And then there's like the old ladies, like the old black ladies, the ones that you see on the movies, they were definitely there. Uh-huh. And then there was the mean ones and the thug ones. It was just so many different characters. And all I did was just cry. And so anytime anybody came near me, they're like, all I did is cry. They're like, stop crying. You're making me cry. And I was like, I don't belong here.
Any nice ones at all?
There were some nice older ladies. There was actually a lady that knew my family. She's like, I know your mom. And I was like, get me out of here.
How was the food?
It was disgusting.
Yeah.
It was like, they call it mystery meat. And it's like a piece of bologna. And it's got like red and green specks in it. And it's like, I don't know what it, we don't know what it is. Yeah. And then you get like a bun. And it was bad.
You've never been back. Is that motivation?
Absolutely. Being in there, I was like, I do not belong here. This is not the life I want to live. I am better than this. I will do whatever in my power to never have this happen again. Oh. It was a life changer for me.
And how long ago was that?
That happened when I was 18.
Okay.
So 12 years ago.
Okay. All right. So you've
rehabilitated. Yes. I got my life together.
That's right. I have to ask you, this is a weird transition, but I have to ask you about the weigh-in for the last fight.
Yeah, you like that?
Well, I mean, it was grandiose. I mean, and I think we have it right over here. Obviously, the pearl is a big part of your look, right?
Yeah.
Let me put my my computer down. What is the inspiration behind all of this?
Okay, so.
And how long did it take for you to come up with all this and get ready for it?
I have a team. This is work here. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
That hair is fake. I don't know if you know, but that's some real fake
hair. I would not judge.
Okay, so really here in this outfit, I did it for my head coach, Uncle Bill. I wore that shirt, but that shirt really looks awful. I was going to do pasties, okay? And so pasties was going to be with this look. But it was a little too much, and I was like, this fight's dedicated to my dad. He'd probably kill me if he saw me in this outfit, so we're not going to do this. My aunt actually had that pearl shirt made the night before for me.
Okay.
Someone made, her aunts made it for me. And what I do is, what my team allows me to do is I go and I Google and I find the look that I want. And we talk about it, they give me their input, and we come up with an idea. And so I wanted this specific shirt. I did not want those pants, they're too tight, but that's what we had to deal with and work with. And I wanted the hair. I really wanted that bright pink, like Barbie. I came out to Nicki Minaj, so she inspired me.
Okay.
And her Barbie ting. So I wanted the Barbie-esque look, and then the pasties so that I could just blow the world.
Yes.
Just blow it out of the park. But my coach was like really nervous, and I was like, okay, and my dad. So I wore a shirt. But yeah, that was the inspiration. It took about 3 hours.
Wow.
To put this together. I go and I have a makeup artist in California that sits down with me and spent 3 hours teaching me how to do my makeup.
Oh my. Oh, you did it yourself. But
yeah,
she
I did
taught
my
you.
Makeup. Okay. But she taught me.
Wow.
And then my aunt and my team members did my hair as I was doing my makeup, and then we just put it all together.
And it worked because it got you a lot of attention. You're happy with the product?
I don't like that shirt, but, you know, it works.
See, this is the thing about Invicta or any non-UFC, just being honest, like, you can't do this in the UFC, right?
No.
We need personality back in
Absolutely.
This sport. We need to allow the fighters to be themselves and to do special things to get people excited for fights.
Yes.
This is the thing that I hope they get rid of that uniform deal. Because you can't, they would scoff at this.
Yeah, they. I mean, I would still do the hair or something, you know. But I think that's. It is a disadvantage for all the UFC fighters and the big athletes. So I'm going to take full advantage of it.
Yes. So things went well. You got attention for that. By the way, what do you think of Elias? What do you think of having a male he was in the corner there. How do you feel about it?
I think it's cool.
Okay.
I think that we should have some variety. I think we need maybe a blonde hair.
Okay, you know, like not just the same guy.
Yeah, maybe even like a Hispanic guy, you know, like so a nice,
you think it's getting a little boring with him?
No, I love Elias, but I
it's
think
okay.
that we
you can tell us how you feel.
No, I do. I love him, but I think we need a variety. Just like they have like four ring girls.
That's true.
We need like four ring boys. We need a blonde hair. We need maybe, is he Hispanic? He looks kind of Hispanic.
He's Canadian, but I don't know what his background is.
Maybe like a black guy. Like okay. we just
yeah,
need
yeah.
some variety. Yeah.
Did you say get rid of all the girls? Just have
yeah,
guys?
Yeah. Just, I love the guys.
Okay. Yeah. Cause it's the female organizations that have the guys.
Yeah.
I'm sure you paid attention to this weekend. I know you watched the fights.
Mm-hmm.
Your division was in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Nico Montaño did not defend her belt. She didn't fight. She got stripped. How do you feel about this?
Oh, gosh. That's intense. I feel bad for her. I feel like Valentina has been saying that from the day one, that she wasn't going to make it to that fight. I think that it sucks, but at the same time, I also am very big on taking responsibility for anything that happens in my life. And I think that, you know, her weight cut might have went bad. That's something that she could have, you know, she has control over. She could have dealt with it in a different way. I don't know about the belt. It hasn't been defended in a while. So I think that that's only fair that they relinquish the belt so that other females that are working really hard can get an opportunity at it. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at with it. I'm just biased, I think, a little bit with it.
Okay. Do you, like, are you honest with Shannon? You want to get back to the UFC, right?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I think at some point I would like to, but I love the idea of Golden Boy doing MMA.
Oh, interesting.
He doesn't have a female. He doesn't have a Latina superstar, future superstar. But, you know, obviously the UFC is the biggest platform there is. I want to get to the biggest platform, period. And I do want to go back. I failed. I'm not one to take failure and accept that. I want to, you know, redeem myself. But I think that, I don't need to, that's not the, you know, the ride that I'm trying to go on immediately. I think that there are other options today in MMA, and I'd love to capitalize on them.
Interesting. Wow. If Golden Boy calls you today, could you go to them?
I would after, right now, the only focus is that Invicta belt.
Okay.
I need that belt.
Okay. You need it.
I need that belt.
Why?
Because my life depends on it.
Why?
That belt's mine. It means everything to me. I need that belt. I want to be Invictus champion.
Okay. Wow. Well, you just sold me right there.
Yeah.
Is it validated? You just got really serious on me all of a sudden.
No, what? I mean that with
you're not belt. Joking.
I'm not joking. That belt, I need that belt.
Is there something about the specific belt? Is there something about who you might be facing? Why so adamant about that specific belt?
I want that title. I think that I love Invicta. Invicta's done so much for me in my career, and I want to be remembered forever as Shannon's champion.
Okay.
I'm going to be remembered as Shannon's champion.
Who do you think makes sense if it is title fight next for you?
I think it may be either, I don't even know her last name, Aga.
Okay.
And Vanessa Porto. Those
yes.
are, I think those are probably the top two in that division that will have the opportunity at that belt.
I feel like it has to be a title fight next, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, why keep the belt vacant for so long?
Right.
You're on a roll. Get you in there. You're getting a lot. I mean, you're one of the faces of Invicta right now, I would say, given the fact that you feel the same way.
Absolutely. I've worked really hard with my PR team to do this. And they've given me a great platform. They're so supportive. They've given me there are three fights in 5.5 months.
Yeah. Like,
this is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not injured. I left that fight again healthy, and I took my week off. I'm going back home tomorrow, and it's back to training. It's back to rehabilitating my body and preparing for champ camp.
When would you like to return to action?
December would be ideal for me. I know they already have their November card announced. I think December is going to be their next card, and I want to headline that card.
Okay, wow. You know everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly what you want.
I do.
And home is California.
Yes.
That's not where you just train. That's where you actually...
That's my home now.
Southern California.
Yes, San Diego.
You train with Lima Leigh McFarlane.
I do. I train with Lima and Liz Carmouche.
That's right, and Liz. Oh, a little 125, little trio there.
Yeah.
That's great for you that you have... people who aren't in your, but not in the same promotion, so right. You can train with them. You're not going to fight them, at least not right now.
Yeah. I think that my coach Manolo, that's kind of his dream, is that all three of his girls hold a belt in each of these big.
I like that.
Big promotions, and he has the opportunity to do that this point.
Also, he's a great dresser as well, as we saw in the weigh-in clip.
Yes. Wait,
now, who picks his outfits? Is it you guys or him?
He picks his own outfit, but as of now, my team said he's no longer allowed to do that.
What?
No, he can't.
Why?
Just because he needs to just step his game up a little bit. I'm really fancy, and so we got to get him on my level.
Oh, wait. So he's allowed to dress, but you have to pick his
out?
Okay. I thought you were saying he's just not allowed to dress up anymore.
Oh, no. He's allowed to dress up, but we're going to kind of be...
Why? You didn't like the last outfit?
Oh, that one was okay, but, like, we could do better.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I let him wear that. That was one of his favorite shirts, so I allowed
it. He did Moana one time and Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah.
Those were fun, no? You didn't love them.
They looked great. They did look great. I just like a different vibe.
Okay.
He actually has this really fly fur jacket.
Okay.
And it's long, and he likes to call himself the Broadfather, right?
Okay.
He says he's kind of like a pimp, but he doesn't have to, you know, he has his girls fight instead of have sex, right?
Okay.
So he considers himself that. So I want him to, like, have a big, like, either a gold chain or some big pearls on with his fur jacket.
Pearls,
you know, I think it'd be really fly.
Okay. All right. I like that. So you're leaving tomorrow?
Yes.
Any other plans while you're in New York?
My cousin better take me to see the Statue of Liberty. And she, like, better take me around because she has not done that yet.
Oh.
And we haven't done much. I've cooked dinner for her a couple nights.
Okay.
And then I went to New Jersey. And I did get to experience your train station.
Yes.
I went from New Jersey to New York.
Okay, Newark to Penn Station probably.
Well, I started at Penn Station and then I accidentally got on the wrong train and then I went to Newark and I had to stay there for an hour and a half and wait for another train and then I had to like figure it out because my phones died.
Okay. Oh,
both of my phones.
Gosh.
So it was pretty. It was.
Why do you have two phones?
One for the plug and one for the low.
What does that mean?
It's a song.
What?
It's a song.
Oh, okay.
I got two phones, one for the plug and one for the low. No?
No.
Okay, it's a rap
Who
song.
Sings it?
I'm
usually up to up on my rap game, but not that one.
I don't know. I don't know.
Now, the low is like that's on the DL.
Yeah.
And what's the plug?
It could be the job.
Oh.
The
I
job.
Feel like you're not telling me the truth. So do you really have two phones?
I do have two phones.
Why?
I have one phone it works out really well.
Okay.
So one of my phones.
Except for when they both die.
Yes, except for when they both die. That's bad. But one phone, it has all my social media on it. It's kind of like the phone number that I'll kind of give to whoever. It's more of a public phone. And then I have my other phone that is more like family and personal. So if they don't get a hold of me on my main phone, they can contact me on that phone. But that phone also has all my music on it. And I don't have any social media on that phone so that when it's time to like train or do something, my music and everything's on the one phone. If I need to use it, if someone needs to get a hold of me, they can. But I don't allow for my social media or any distractions.
Oh, okay. I like that. You're running. You don't want people to bother you and things like that. Now, the number I texted you on, is that on the first phone or the second phone?
That's on the second phone. That's on the personal one.
Whoa. Look at me.
Yeah. I like
I
that.
I made it.
Yeah.
So I'm the plug.
You're the
or
plug.
Or am I the low?
No, you're the plug.
All right. Okay. Well done on my part. That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming in. Thank you so much for doing this. Yes.
Thank
it's you. Great. Continued success on all that you are doing in and out of the cage. I was talking to Eric before, like the way you promote yourself, that you think outside the box, you do things like that. It's very smart, and it's what I think all fighters need to do in this
Absolutely.
Day and age. So it's cool to see someone actually take their career seriously. Not in the cage, it's not just about the cage stuff. You actually have to put yourself out there and market yourself. So well done to you.
Thank you.
Keep it up. I hope you get that title fight.
Yes.
Keep
me
us
too.
Posted.
Yes.
And if
I
you
will.
Get it, good luck and well done on turning everything around for
Thank
yourself.
You.
You're an inspiration.
Thank you so much.
Cool.
I have to come back with the belt.
Yes, please. You can put it right over there.
Yes.
And before you leave, we're doing this new thing where we want people to sign our little banner over there. People can't see it, but one day we're going to have all our guests sign it and give it away to a lucky fan. So you're going to be the first one.
Yeah, see, the
How about
first
that?
Is always the best. I'm always the best.
An ESPN banner. So there's a bunch of markers right over there.
Okay.
If you want to go sign it right now, you can do it.
Yes, I would love to.
Okay.
All right.
There she goes. Pearl Gonzalez, the number one contender in the Invicta women's flyweight division. She's about to see. There she goes. She just walked through, and she's about to sign it. And you wrote me a nice little note on the card that you gave me, too, Pearl. I appreciate it. Thanking me for all. I'm a pioneer for women's MMA myself. You thank me, and I really appreciate that. So thank you for those kind words. And thank you for all that you do. Your victory dance, your cousin over there is dancing.
Yes.
Yes. I think she's trying to plug your victory dance. It was a great victory dance, by the way.
Which one?
The one that you posted. Yes. As you're stepping. Yes.
Do I step here or do I?
No, you can walk out right over there.
Thank you.
It's sort of a DIY thing over here that we've got. But thank you so much. All the best to you. And someone's going to walk you out.
Okay,
I appreciate it.
Much.
Whenever they come in, they're going to come in and get you. I promise.
Thank you.
So there's Pearl Gonzalez doing her thing in Invicta. See, there they are. And if you're not following her on social media, you are missing out. All the best to you. Take care. I am the plug, or am I the low? We'll never know. We'll never know. But that was a lot of fun. All right. Oh. CM Punk texted you, Pearl. He said, Pearl, I got to go eat and train. Good talk. We'll talk later. There you have it. Boom. All right. Thank you very much to Pearl Gonzalez for stopping by. Thank you to all our guests. So now what I'm going to do is this. We still got a lot more to discuss. Post show's coming up. Now, let me just break it down very carefully for everyone because there's still some confusion. All right? This is it. Post show is not live. However, it will be up almost instantaneously once we're done. It will be up on iTunes and all other places where you get your Helwani show. So it'll be up on ESPN.com, PodCenter, the app, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever else it's up. YouTube, it will be up on YouTube as well in video form. We'll be answering your questions. We'll talk 228. We'll talk betting. We'll talk Moscow. We'll talk anything under the sun. And we've got some interesting things in store for all of you. So stay tuned for that. This is the conclusion, though, of the live program. And I want to thank everyone who stopped by today. And I want to thank everyone who tuned in. What a fun day it has been. As we put 228 to bed, there's still much more to discuss as far as Tyron Woodley's next fight is concerned, his place in the welterweight division, history books, if you will. What's next for the women's flyweight division? What's next for Valentina Shevchenko and Nico Montano? So much more to discuss. So if you're a crust first guy, perhaps you already listened or watched the post show. Well, if you're watching this live, that can't be the case, but you get my point. Stay tuned for that. For now, we shall say goodbye on this platform. Thank you so much to Tyron Woodley. Check out his single, I Heard It. I'm the plug. I'm a VIP. I hear things first. I'm a quote-unquote insider. It's great. Check it out with Wiz Khalifa. It comes out later on this week, and congratulations to him on the big win. Thank you very much to Valentina Shevchenko. Thank you very much to Colby Covington, Jim Miller, Aljamain Sterling, CM Punk. Check out Ultimate Beastmaster on Netflix. Thank you very much to Diego Sanchez, and of course, thank you very much to Pearl Gonzalez for stopping by in studio. Thank you very much to FanDuel, our sponsor. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Back next week, same time and place. Happy New Year. Until I say peace, I'm out of here.